is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Boy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon and welcome to One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours or so. Great to be back. I was off for a week. Steve, you and I talked a lot during Super Bowl week, and we're going to talk a lot today over the next 3 hours, of course. Great job at the Super Bowl, though. You guys were great to watch. It's basically me and Donald sitting back here 2 weeks ago watching you do our show.
That's guys good. Eating popcorn back here.
We kind of were. Yeah, and you were doing great work, though. And you got a chance to talk to a lot of people, a variety of people, and a lot of different opinions on the Super Bowl. And I'm trying to think. There were a couple of guests you had who accurately forecast the Eagles' big win. Do you remember who it was?
I have no idea, but we did.
We talked to about
17 or 18 people.
Yeah.
We had like 20 people all together. We couldn't even actually use some of them. We went out on opening night and got some interviews, and we never even found time to put them in. And plus, right after we left, went off the air on Friday, you know, Kevin Harlan and Andre Reed were both supposed to be on the show. They showed up, you know, after we were off the air.
Right.
I'm like, bro.
You're too late.
Dre, you got to get here,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
So.
Great week.
It was fun.
Years.
It was pretty fun, yeah. And Minneapolis did a nice job with it. Our process of getting from the hotel to the, you know, how that's logistic,
yeah,
is a problem. It was cramped at Radio Row, but it kind of always is.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was good. And the game was truly a really, really great Super Bowl. It was a good game.
I thought it was too. I was off. I was down in Florida watching the game, a little bit under the weather for a couple of days. But that game got my attention. And you, of course, watched the game. And I know you talked about it on the show a little bit last week. The play, the fourth and one, the touchdown pass to Nick Foles, to me, maybe the greatest play in Super Bowl history. It really was.
Yeah.
Gutsy, incredibly surprising. Just to go for it was pretty amazing. I mean, Doug Peterson fulfilled what everybody said about him and his gambling nature, and he did it with really a sensational play, an amazing
yeah,
play.
Yeah, and you think about, you know, it's a great play. It really was a great play because it worked. It was well executed. They did it just right. The only, you know, and you think what would have been the ramifications if they don't get it?
Mm-hmm.
There's no question in the world in which we live, it goes from being the greatest thing ever in the history of the world to the stupidest play in Super Bowl history. I mean, that's kind of the function of the society in which we live. The Twitterverse would have killed him if they didn't pull that off.
Right.
But they did. They pulled it off, and they made it look easy. And to do that at that moment. And I remember I've seen it in the subsequent days where Nick Foles came over and he goes, let's run the Philly special. And
yeah.
Peterson's like, yeah,
yeah,
let's run it. That's great,
that's
man.
Great
that's great.
How that happens kind of organically in the course of a game.
Yeah.
Good for them. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Super Bowl. We're going to talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills today, about the NFL. Got a guest coming up at 2 o'clock, Pat McAfee, former NFL punter, who follows the Indianapolis Colts, covers the Indianapolis Colts, got a podcast of his own and a very entertaining podcast at that. And we're going to talk with him about the Indianapolis Colts and the hiring just yesterday of your old buddy Frank Reich. We talked to you about this, I think, at the Super Bowl, right, a couple of weeks ago. Or maybe even when you were on set here, we were talking about what's it going to take for Frank Reich to get a chance to be a head coach. Well, what it took was for Josh McDaniels to commit to the job and then back away from the job, for Frank to be available after the Super Bowl. His access would have been a little bit tougher before the Super Bowl game,
yeah.
And everything fell into place. You got to be ecstatic about it.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it. And, of course, all the guys who were teammates with me and Frank here in Buffalo, we kind of feel vindicated. We always called it for Frank to be a head coach years and years, even when we were playing, when he was here in Buffalo before he went to Carolina and finished his career, and you just knew that he was going to be one of those guys. Then he left football for 10 years and came back in, started as a quarterback coach in Indianapolis, then went to San Diego as the quarterback's coach, then was in Philly as the offensive coordinator, and it's just been a slow, steady progress, and Frank is, there's no question He's ready for it, qualified for it, and I think it's going to be really fun to watch him put together a staff.
How do you think he'll do with the defensive side of the ball, and how critical is that hire for Frank Reich?
I think that's the critical hire on his staff. I mean, offensively, he can handle anything that needs to be done. I do like Sirianni, his offensive coordinator. The guy, the word I have of guys who know, is Nick, right? Nick Sirianni.
Nick Sirianni, yep.
He's a stellar guy. Really,
Jamestown,
really great, great, great coach. I'm really stoked for Sirianni to get this chance through Frank. And but having said that, there's no doubt, given Frank's history as a head coach and as a player, he's going to need help on the defensive side, and he's going to need somebody that knows how to handle that side of the football almost completely, I would think. Now, no question, Frank's got what it takes to get in there and stick his nose in the playbook and understand what's going on the defensive side, no doubt. But he's going to need a guy to coordinate that for him, and I think that's his critical hire.
You know, we were talking, our producer Jay Harris and I ran into Lorenzo Alexander this morning and talking about this hire, and obviously Frank's, the bulk, all of his experience is on the offensive side of the ball, and you do wonder about the other side of the ball. But the thing that Frank has, and you can speak to this, just from knowing him as I do, he has a presence about him. He has a low-key, even-keeled demeanor about him. He has a thoughtful approach that I think players will respond to. And I think, in many respects, kind of like Buffalo's coach Sean McDermott, he can convey, and it's genuine, he can convey real concern for players and their welfare. I think he will be a good players' coach. Not that it'll be easy on players, but they will know that this coach cares about them and cares about their welfare and wants them to have success. I think Frank will be able to do that.
He's presidential.
Yeah.
In his personality, right. in his professional demeanor. He's presidential. He's that kind of guy. He's an inspiring guy. He's the most humble and self-deprecating guy. Not self-deprecating, but certainly never puts himself above the fray. I mean, he's in it. He's willing to listen. I mean, he's totally, totally a humble guy, and his ego has never been part of what drives him. And you can't say that about all these guys. In fact, he's confident, no question, but all these guys, part of the deal is having, being confident enough in yourself that you can command a group of guys who
right.
are stellar athletes and all have egos, and they're all pretty cocky, and they're all type A personalities. So it takes a certain kind of guy to get in front of that room and command it. Frank can do that in a way that is humble and yet inspiring. It's pretty cool. He's got presidential qualities, no question.
Like he could be a president someday, you think?
No, I mean, in the current climate, I'd vote for him.
I would,
can
too.
Can I say that?
I would absolutely
can
vote
I say
for
that?
Him tomorrow if I could. So Frank moves on to be the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. The way it happened, the way it went down with McDaniels pulling out last week, to me, kind of sets it up as this is going to be good. This is going to work out well. This is going to be someday, 5 years from now, 3 years from now, people will say, and how about the Colts, not getting the guy they thought they wanted, getting Frank Reich instead? And how did that work out? That worked out great. You know what I mean? I think when it's all said and done, I honestly believe the Colts are much better off with presidential, even-keel Frank Reich as their predictable Frank Reich as their head coach, as opposed to Josh McDaniels, who was not a success as a head coach in Denver before.
No, and let's face it, I'm not going to bash Josh McDaniels because because no doubt he's got experiences through his time in New England and, of course, his time as head coach in Denver that are going to serve him well should he matriculate away from New England and get another head coaching opportunity. It will be I'm sure he's learned a lot, and there's a lot of water under the bridge for Sean McDaniels. But by the same token, I think Frank Reich, from my perspective, which as distant as it is from the heart of the situation in Indianapolis, I think Frank's a much better fit there. He was assistant coach there for a good period of time. He was an assistant coach just after they had won the Super Bowl. He's just a better fit for that organization, given their ownership structure, and given his experience in that city already once around, and just, you know, a handful of years ago.
I'm sorry to interrupt. You were talking about Frank Reich, the new head coach in the Indianapolis Colts, who will be introduced to the news conference tomorrow. You're welcome to join us. I know many Western New Yorkers have had encounters with Frank Reich over the years. You may have some thoughts on him being a head coach. We'll get to our Bills topic in a moment here as well. Phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. On Frank Reich, you played with him for several years, close with him when he played here. Did you always have in the back of your mind that he had head coach potential in the NFL? Did you think that where he was going?
It wasn't just me. I mean, all the guys have been talking about it all the time. Don Beebe and I have had a number of conversations about it. Jim, Thurman, Bruce, they all knew that once Frank got into that side of the business and started coaching, that it was going to be, he was going to ascend pretty quickly. Now, head coaching jobs, I mean, you know, they don't grow on trees, and there's not very many of them available at any given time. And there's a long line of guys who are qualified to do it, and guys who are either have done it and weren't successful, or who are being successful in the role they have now with the team. But we knew that Frank, and particularly when he started being the quarterback's coach and then offensive coordinator and stuff like that, and he started going through interview processes, that he would get better and better at it and start to understand what it took to get one of those jobs. And, of course, this is the chance he's gotten. And, yeah, there's no doubt. Not just me thought he was going to be a head coach, but all of his teammates in the old Bills teams that we were on saw that in his future.
And yet he took that circuitous route. He didn't, you know, jump off the playing field and get right into coaching.
He was in the ministry for 10 years.
He ran a school, right, in Carolina?
He was a dean of one of the schools at I can't remember the seminary that he went to.
Yeah.
He was ordained. He was a pastor of a local church for a year. And then, you know, after he had done that for a few years, he decided, you know, something was missing, and he wanted to get back into it. And he took – I mean, he was, you know – an offensive, you know, quality control assistant, and started that way, and certainly ascended pretty quickly.
I wonder what those years out of coaching, out of football, I'd be curious, maybe he'll talk about it tomorrow at his news conference, what that added to his resume, what that added to his approach, you know, to life and to coaching, the profession of coaching.
Well, his character has always been in the right spot. I mean, he's always been a great example of a guy who does things the right way for all the right reasons, and kind of been a stalwart. We were all back in the day when we were all young and, you know, we're all freshly married, no kids. You know, you get to know those guys pretty good, and you play a lot of golf with them when they're young, and you just knew at the very get-go that, you know, Frank came from a really good family, solid background. He was a hard-working guy and very intelligent. And you knew that, you know, those kind of qualities, hardworking, intelligent people willing to make sacrifices, are going to be successful in whatever they do. And we knew if he chose coaching that it was going to turn out that way.
Frank Reich hired as the Indianapolis Colts head coach. The announcement tomorrow, we'll talk with you about that. If you'd like, or anything on your agenda, 803-0550. And toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy with Steve Tasker. Now, Frank Reich, Steve, it seems to me, moves into a very good – almost very good situation in Indianapolis. Pretty good to very good, let me say that. First of all, because he's got the quarterback, Andrew Luck. Now, there are questions about Andrew Luck. Had that treatment in Europe over the last couple of months of the regular season. No one quite knows when Andrew Luck is going to be ready to throw again. There's all kinds of reporting about he might not be ready this spring to throw again. It's been, you know, over a year since Andrew Luck has played. But when he's healthy, and you anticipate a young guy like Andrew Luck is eventually going to be healthy, he'd be regarded as a potential franchise building block. That, to me, more than anything else, makes the Colts' job attractive, I would think, and especially to a quarterback whisperer like Frank Reich.
You'd think so, but then again, you got to know that there are some things that kept Josh McDaniels from taking that job. And certainly they're two different guys, and they have different priorities and different stations in life, and, you know, like Frank and his wife are kind of empty nesters.
Yeah.
Josh McDaniels was not in that spot. He's just in the opposite of that spot. He's got four kids, and they're all at home, so he didn't, you know, the upheaval would be greater for him and his wife than it would be for Frank and his wife. So there's that. But I think, too, and you tell me, I mean, if it's that good an opportunity, why Josh McDaniels goes all that way down that road and then bails?
I think the Patriots had something to do with it. I think the Patriots have an implicit – promise to Josh McDaniels that when Bill Belichick leaves, you are our guy. You will get first crack at the job, if not guaranteed. Probably didn't guarantee the job. But, look, the writing's on the wall, right? In fact, you were saying you thought Belichick might be done after this game.
Yeah, he's starting. He's, to me, he was savoring this Super Bowl in the run-up to it and the pregame media stuff. He was savoring it and more relaxed than I've ever seen him in that situation. And to me, that spells a guy who is pretty content with what he's already accomplished, whether he wins that game or not. And I think that's a guy who is – and he has always said he's not going to do it when he's 70. And that is a pretty finite number of years left.
Yeah.
He's turned 66 this year.
Yeah. So a couple of years with Belichick, and then you would think that Josh McDaniels –
a couple of years. He's had a couple of years. I mean, he's been there for a while.
No, I mean a couple of more years with Bill Belichick, and then you'd think they would be ready to turn the reins over to Josh McDaniels. Now, the issue is going to be how long is Brady going to play? Okay, I get that. But I also think that there's ownership stability in New England, and Josh McDaniels knows what his owner, Bob Kraft, is all about in New England, knows how what his relationship has been with Belichick, knows how he likes to run the team, knows the commitment they'll make to providing him with a winning team. And I think that went into it, too. I don't think that sort of ownership stability exists right now in Indianapolis, or maybe never has, really, when you go back to Robert Irsay. Now Jim Irsay, his son, is the owner. I don't think that sort of stability and predictability exists in Indianapolis. There's a new, highly, you know, new one-year, highly regarded general manager in Indy, but I think the main thing that McDaniels would be looking at is, you know, I know what I've got here in New England. Yes, I went far down this road with Indy, which I think was almost, you know, inexcusable to take him that far down the road and take those assistant coaches that far down the road. But he's probably thinking, I know what I got here in New England. I know the ownership situation. I don't know how long the quarterback will be around, Tom Brady, but maybe I get a couple of years with him. And I just think, you know, and probably money was involved, as it always is.
Maybe. I'll tell you this, though. One thing that everybody thinks that's going to be awesome, you know, you're going to take a – I don't know that it's a smart idea to want to be the guy to follow Bill Belichick.
Right.
I don't think that's a smart move. You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
In fact, you don't want to be the next guy either. I mean, I don't know that anybody is – now, certainly, maybe Bill is going to take it a step further than anybody could ever see. Maybe he leaves a legacy behind in that building that really is sustainable by anybody, not just Bill Belichick. But I, given my experience in the NFL, the success organizations have is due in large part due to a very small number of guys in the building. Starting in that building, it's Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft, and then, of course, Tom Brady.
Right.
When you take Bill out of that mix, and Tom's going to be gone, I think – I don't want to be the guy that goes in there and tries to do exactly what Bill Belichick did behind him. You get the chance. I mean, what are you going to do? Okay, you're going to make the money. Okay, that's fine. But I'm telling you what, you're not going to be able to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think you're –
it's a fact to follow.
What are you going to do? You're going to go to the playoffs every year and lose in the second round even. If you win one playoff game and lose in the second round, or you get in and you lose the division round, or you lose the championship game, you don't get to a Super Bowl in the first 5 or 6 years, and you're always one and done, or once in a while you miss the playoffs even. All of a sudden, you are a complete and abject failure, given the bar that he has set. I don't want any part of that.
You think he should have been looking for the way out?
Yeah. I do. That's what Matt Patricia did.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see. But let's face it, I don't think taking over for Bill Belichick is a guarantee of rubber stamp Super Bowls.
No,
title.
Absolutely not. No one will ever win like that. 803-0550, the number to call, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Frank Reich, new head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. You might have some thoughts on that. Some thoughts on who he might assemble on his staff. You mentioned Sirianni, obviously, is mentioned as his offensive coordinator. We talked about how the defensive coordinator job is going to be a critical hire for Frank Reich. Obviously, he knows that. And, Steve, I saw rumblings that Don Beebe, another of your former teammates, who's been running his own speed camps and coaching high schools outside Chicago, or at least one high school outside Chicago for the last several years, high school football, he might be in line to be wide receivers coach, his first entry to the NFL as a wide receivers coach.
I know for years they had talked about it, and Don has intimated to me that he would do it for Frank. I don't know that that's still – it's been a while because, you know, we didn't know – because Frank started interviewing for head coaching jobs 5 years ago. certainly a lot of water under the bridge. And I don't know if Don would actually be considered for that or whether Don would consider it.
Yeah.
But I know those that's the kind of conversation that happens when a guy gets a head coaching job. As a head coach, and I think particularly a first-time head coach like Frank is, you want guys you know and you've trusted, guys that you can talk to off the record, and they're still going to be your pal. You know, I mean, you're not going to have to worry about what he's going to think of you or whether he's going to maneuver his way through ownership and back channels to have you fired and have him take over. I mean, guys do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bad look, but you don't know. It certainly happened here in Buffalo when I was, you know, and so there are guys
you need loyalty.
Yeah, you need loyalty, and that's first and foremost, and qualifications. I mean, if there are two guys that are pretty nearly qualified to each other, and you got one who you know is loyal, you've known him since you were young, and that guy gets the nod, absolutely no question, because you need everybody. One thing you do know, you need everybody pulling the same direction, and loyal guys do that.
We're with Steve Tasker. He's in for Donald Jones. Donald, back tomorrow. We're welcoming your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Your thoughts on Frank Reich, the new head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. That, by the way, another thing that sets up Frank well is that division. Yes, I know Jacksonville went deep into the playoffs this year. Tennessee, I guess, is going to be okay. But I think that, and Houston, when they get Deshaun Watson back, will be competitive. I still think that division pretty much wide open almost every year, don't you? There's no powerhouse in that division.
Yeah, and I get you too, because it seems like in that division, now that Peyton Manning was out of the mix, winning it every year like he did for a decade and a half. Yeah, it's a different team every year that's up at the top of that division. Last year looked like early on that Houston, after Deshaun Watson came out of the blocks and they were scoring 30 points a game and had a top five defense, and they were like, wow, that's it. This is their year. And then Deshaun Watson gets hurt, and they can't win any games. And then, of course, in Tennessee, Mike Mularkey was fired for his mishandling of a great young quarterback in Marcus Mariota, or the misuse,
I guess,
of him. I guess
I didn't see that.
It's easy for us to sit back. I don't, you know,
I don't get it.
It looked like he was building a pretty good football
team. I thought so too.
But nevertheless, they switched it, and now Vrabel is their head coach. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. The division sets up well for Frank Reich. Although, let's face it, you know, if you're those other three teams, Houston, Jacksonville,
Tennessee,
you're looking at Indianapolis saying, well, now they got questions at quarterback and they got a new head coach. You know, now they're the number four team instead of us. So, yeah, that certainly is a division where you could make some hay as a young head coach, given the upheaval.
Yeah.
Two teams have brand new head coaches. Jacksonville backed into the playoffs like nobody ever has, with a great defense and a quarterback that nobody would even take if he was a free agent. And so it's, you know, I mean, Houston looks like a pretty good football team when they got everybody healthy, but they have not been able to stay healthy at those key positions enough.
All right, we got to talk about the Bills today, too, and we'll talk with that about you. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Buffalo Bills. Steve, you got the article in front of you. Sports Illustrated, our buddy Andy Benoit, who writes for Sports Illustrated, has the Bills listed as the third neediest team in the NFL. We're talking about off-season personnel needs. He's got the Bills ranked third. Who's he got in front of you? You got the article right there. Who's in front of the Bills?
In front of the Bills is the Jets.
Okay.
And of Cleveland.
Okay.
That's pretty bad company. But I think one of the reasons is the Bills were a pretty old football team last year.
Yeah.
They had like 17 guys on their roster. They have like 17, if you don't count Eric Wood, 17 guys on the roster now that are 30-plus years of age. And so it looks like – and a lot of those guys are free agents. I mean, they got some guys that are looking like, you know, they got to replace a lot of key guys. But then again, some of them maybe not so key. I mean, you go down the list. I made a quick list. You got Joe Webb, Mike Tolbert. Now he's a guy that did have a big role, but Tywan Jones, Brandon Tate, Kyle Williams.
These are the old guys.
Yeah, these are the old guys. Cedric Thornton, Ramon Humber, Sharice Wright, Colt Anderson. I mean, those are guys that, you know,
of that group, you need one or
you're
two.
You're talking about one other guy in that group is also LeSean McCoy, who there's, you know, he's elite still.
Yeah.
So you got good guys and bad guys. All those guys are coming up in free agency. They're gonna have to replace them. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons the Bills are talked about as being one of the the neediest teams, and it's a team that was in the playoffs this last year. But let's face it, this is a coaching staff that got every ounce of production they could out of every guy in their roster, and it led them to the playoffs.
That's our Twitter poll. We want to know from you if you agree with that, first of all, and you can call us up and let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. Are the Bills' needs that great down there with the Browns and the New York Jets? Are they the third neediest team when it comes to personnel in the upcoming offseason? Let us know what you think about that. Then we're going to ask you to rank the offseason needs. We got a Twitter poll up about that. The Bills, Sports Illustrated lists the Bills as the third neediest team in the NFL. How would you rank their offseason needs? We got quarterback in each one of these. We're asking you to rank them because, look, they need a quarterback at some level. They're going to need a quarterback.
That's a great web poll. I don't know if you can't see it. It's on one.
It's a lot there.
J. Harris.
There's a lot there. And if you're listening on the radio.
One choice is quarterback, linebacker, center, edge rusher. That's one choice. The next choice is quarterback, wide receiver, center, linebacker. And then the third choice is wide receiver, quarterback, edge rusher.
Offensive tackle. And then other.
It's like two from column A, three from column B. I like that. This is my kind of web poll.
It's like a menu. What would you like? Yeah. But let us know. That's why we need to talk to you about it. The phone line's open. I would put edge rusher as the top of my offseason needs. Yes, quarterback's important, but edge rusher, I think, is important when you look at their lack of sack, their lack of pass rush this year, the way the defense was uneven at best. Edge rusher's at the top of my list. Quarterback's in there somewhere. Wide receiver's in there somewhere. I don't think I fit into any of those categories, though, in our Twitter poll.
I'll tell you what, I think you got to look at their team, at the way the Bills laid it out. Their season, their defense looked like a defense whose strength was in the back end. They couldn't get a pass rush. They couldn't didn't get any sacks. They were pretty good stopping the run, but they were okay stopping the run mostly. Their strength was in the back end of that defense. That's what a defense in the NFL who has those strengths looks like. It looks a lot different than a defense like the Philadelphia Eagles put out there this year, where their strength was the front end, the front four pass rushers. They were getting pressure, and if they sent extra people and if they timed their blitzes right, they looked a little dominant at times. So I think if the Bills, you got to know, the Bills aren't bereft of talent on the defensive side. Their secondary was stellar this year. Their defensive front, however, couldn't put any pressure on the passer, and that's one of the reasons why they were a kind of a middle of the road defense, or at least when you just look at them. So I think if they can get a pass rush without having to manufacture it with blitzes and exotic schemes and doing all that, if they can get pressure with four guys, all of a sudden the Buffalo Bills defense turns into a really good unit. But they could not do that this year, and that was the issue. I as you can tell by my little rant here, that's where I think they really need to address in the offseason. I think their defensive line.
Andy Benoit has edge rusher, right? Is the Bills' top priority need? And acknowledging quarterback, we know they're going to have to add a quarterback, probably in the draft, maybe in free agency as well. But edge rusher is to me the top priority. What do you think?
I'm with you.
Get some rush. They're 31st in sacks per play last year. 26th overall in defense. That's got to get better if you're going to take the next step or even follow up this step this year. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The Bills, are they really the third neediest team in the NFL this year? Seems like a lot, but you got to examine it a little bit in depth. And if so, how do you rank their offseason needs? Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Steve Tasker in studio with us today until 3. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. I am John Murphy. Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones. Donald's back tomorrow. I was gone all week. Still suffering the effects of a little bit of a cold, Steve, but I think he'll be okay. Please bear with me. I promise not to sneeze that way. When I sneeze or cough, I'm going this way.
I appreciate it. You were questionable coming into today.
I'm good. After a time. I'm good, and I'm glad to be back.
I tried to hurry you off your vacation a little too quick.
No, glad to be back. Hey, before we move any further, the guys before us, the instigators, Andrew Peters, was adamant that you are absolutely wrong in your position on Jack Eichel.
I know.
You came in here and lit them up during their final commercial break,
I
guess.
Oh, I dog cussed them. And they asked me, the two of them were disagreeing, right?
Yes.
So they said, what would you do? I said, Eichel.
We're talking about Eichel, 100% healthy.
2 months, 2 months left in the season.
Right.
We got a month off or whatever. Then skates for a couple of weeks, starting. Then he gets 100% for the last 2 weeks. Do you go ahead and play him for the last 2 weeks? I said, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I go, yeah, you play. You're paying him to play. I don't know. You're not paying him all that money yet. He's still on his rookie deal. I don't care if he's making $20. If you're paying him a couple hundred grand to play, that's just that. You know, other guys are doing it. Why isn't he? Plus, you want him to be captain next year. You got to put him on the ice, and you got to tell him before you put him on the ice. Hey, let's see it these last 2 weeks. We got a lot of big off season coming. It was a season that was disappointing for everybody. You set the tone in these last 2 weeks, and you bring everybody with you. You make everybody set the tone.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, you play him.
You know, and this concept of waiting, well, let's save him for next year. Let's wait till next year. These fans have waited long enough.
He can heal up in May.
These fans have waited long enough for something to happen with that hockey team.
Forget about the fans. You got 20 other guys in the locker room that are sitting there bleeding and hurting and aching.
Let's go now. What are we waiting for? Is next year the big push? I thought 2 years ago was a big push. You know, let's go now. Seriously.
Don't turn into the bitter non-tank guy again.
Exactly. I had the experience, Steve, Saturday night to go to Tampa Bay Lightning against the LA Kings in Tampa.
Down in Tampa, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, they're a great team. It's a different experience here because the team is so good. The building is alive. People are into it. That's what you need here. I mean, that's Tampa, Florida. With that atmosphere, with that support from the fan base, from every seat filled to the building is alive, the team is really good. I saw the most amazing save I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, the backhander.
Yeah.
I mean, behind the back.
Behind the back. But I'm telling you, that should be here. This is supposed to be a hockey town. Right now, Tampa has got it going on. And these fans have waited long enough for that kind of team, that kind of atmosphere. If Eichel's healthy at the end of the year and there's 2 weeks left to play, you play him. He's a young kid.
Oh, you bet you do. There's no excuse not to. There is absolutely no – it's to me, it's indefensible not to play him.
Yeah.
But, you know,
what are they saving him for? What do you think?
They flip
the switch next year? Is next year
– Well, here's the thing, too, and to your point about, you know, the atmosphere – it's kind of like the drought here in Buffalo before the Bills, you know, got in the playoffs. You forget what it's like to have an arena where you walk in there and you can't wait for you're all in it together. I mean, and it's more intimate in hockey than it is in football. And you go over to New Era Field. I mean, the masses are there,
right.
70,000 people, and it's, you know, you got the people right around you, but it's more intimate in the center in the arena. Because, man, you can hear those people over there yelling, and you can, you know, you're in it together. It's a much more intimate, and you feel like the fan base is much more united, even though it's unbelievable in New Era. It's intimate and loud and electric.
Right.
And I'll never forget some of the coolest moments, well, the coolest moments for me ever as a sports fan, not as a player, obviously, and the stuff I went through with this team here in this stadium, but as a fan here in Buffalo, hockey's my fan thing. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I like the sport. It's the best live sport in professional sports because of what it brings. But, man, to go in there it is the coolest. I've had some great moments in the old Odd and in this building as well. You forget what it's like. And, you know, you're just ready for that to roll around. Because, yeah, I mean, my kids are – even my son's 30. He kind of remembers it too. I mean, but – it goes away so fast.
Yeah.
It goes away so fast. And then to see how the season they were this year, it's pretty disappointing.
We're not talking hockey, though. We're talking football. I'm sorry. I promised Andrew Peters I would bring that up with you because he said you basically ruined the back end of their show.
I'm all over. I really did. I wasn't on the air, though. I mean,
no, I know, but he said you distracted them.
They got to recover from me.
They're so tightly focused on that show.
I totally
took them off their game.
I totally parachuted in and threw a hand grenade in them. I just like, no, you can't.
You got it all wrong.
Right.
Give us a call. We're talking about the Bills. Sports Illustrated says the Bills are the third neediest team in the NFL when it comes to personnel, behind the Browns, behind the Jets, then the Buffalo Bills. That seems a little odd. We want you to rank their offseason needs. Phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-5.
We were talking, too, and one of the reasons that's on there, and I said it earlier, is because their roster is – they had a ton of guys on one-year deals.
Yeah.
So you look at their roster, nobody's on it. You know, I mean, they've got a lot of guys they've got to sign. And it's going to be a little bit probably like it was last year, this year, in that they're going to sign a lot of guys and have on prove-it deals. There's probably some guys on the Bills roster. I mean, you look at Travis Cadet, who's still under contract, but a guy like that who came in and played very well for a team who got in the playoffs, played a key role. And you got other guys around scattered around the roster as well. But the fact is, a lot of these guys are pending free agents.
Yeah.
So they really – it's hard to count them as being on the roster. So the Bills, you know, forget about the needs that would have made them better this year. Like, you know, if we got a better pass rush, if you know, that kind of thing. They don't have a roster. You know, they don't have anybody on their roster right now that's actually, you know, under contract. Now, the league year is ending pretty quick. But, you know, so that's what one thing that makes them needy is the fact that they had so many guys on short-term deals this last year. That really turned out helping them.
I mean, you look at the list of Bills pending free agents coming up mid-March, March 14th, you know, how many of them are priorities? I mean, Leonard Johnson to me would be a priority, right? Guy played here for 1 year. I would put Preston Brown at or near the top of my priority list. Jordan Matthews is an interesting question. You know, they traded for him. They never got full value because he couldn't stay healthy, but can you live without him? Maybe. I would like to have him here, but can you live without him? You probably could. Ramon Humber has had good moments as a starter and otherwise, and certainly a key special teamer for the Bills. But priorities, E.J. Gaines played a little bit.
The last three names on our list, the people watching can see it, but it's Preston Brown, E.J. Gaines, and Chantrell Henderson. Those are three names that I think the Bills should – prioritized to sign, at least Chantrell Henderson, sign him, and then maybe even trade him or trade Cordy Glenn. Chantrell's a very good tackle, plays extremely well when he's healthy and on the field. He's a guy that can really go get it. And to have an offensive tackle that you can count on to go along with Deion Dawkins and Cordy Glenn, so you got three guys there, and that's a lot. You know, I'm thinking you got to come up and say, you know, that's something we could package with some picks and stuff, you know, and get a quarterback, get a defensive lineman, get an edge rusher, what have you, you name it. And so all these, you know, there are some positions where the Bills are full. But E.J. Gaines, I mean, the stat was they were 8-3 with him in the lineup. That's a big number for a corner. He's a legit corner. And that keeps your secondary strong and elite. So, you know, I don't think you want to – put a chink in your armor right there either. So I think he wanted to go after him and sign him.
Want you to rank the Bills' offseason needs. How would you rank them? Where do you think they start? 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Nick calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Nick. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, what do you feel about Groy filling in a position at center for Eric Wood? I think he's done a good enough job to at least compete for the starting role this next year.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I that's a good question. I'm with you, Nick. Groy is a guy who can play center. That's what he did all year. He's a backup center to Wood all year. And plus, he's a big body. He's bigger than Wood. And I think given the trend in the NFL, run stoppers are a little bit like tree stumps in there. You get those big defensive tackles or a nose guard in a 3-4 defense. They're big, and they're genetically different. They're just enormous, big, heavy, strong, explosive guys. You need a big, strong, heavy body to combat that, and Groy is that. He's a big body, and he has also been on the team. He knows this. You know, this is a guy that's, you know, you're going to plug him. I mean, right now, there's no other way for me to see it going any other way than having him just be absolutely plugged into the center spot, and you're going to roll like that. And you're looking now, instead of looking for a starter at center, you're looking for depth.
Yeah.
And that takes the pressure off that on draft day.
And I do, you know, we had Ryan Groy on the show a couple of weeks ago. I think even though he knows nothing is handed to him, I think he considers himself the likely candidate to replace Eric Wood at center. And I think the Bills could certainly do a lot worse. Groy filled in well in his 7 starts in the 2016 season, and I think he certainly paid as if he were a starter. I think they're well set. So on our list, on the Twitter poll that's up on Twitter, you know, center's in there, but I would not put center among my top 4, 5, 6 priorities for the Bills going into this offseason, personnel season. Marshall calling from Conklin, New York. Where is Conklin, New York, Marshall?
Just outside of Binghamton.
Oh, okay.
So we're long-distance fans.
Yeah, great to have you on the air with us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Problem I have is that the MSG, sometimes we get the Buffalo feed and sometimes we get the New York City feed.
Yeah.
So inconsistent is being able to watch your show. So if this question's been asked, I apologize. You're talking about weaknesses and needs for the Buffalo Bills. We, for years, have not had a consistent number one quarterback. Now, I know there's a lot of other needs out there, but it seems to me that if we could get somebody like a Teddy Bridgewater, who's obviously well-rested for coming off a knee injury, probably get him relatively cheap, and we've also got the two first-round draft choices. Like I said, I know we got a lot of other positions that need to get filled, but to me, we need a good leadership quarterback position. So
you're right, Marshall. I agree with you. And one of the things that you got to know is it's an interesting market this year because there have been a couple of guys who have jumped out from last year, and all of a sudden we found out some things that we didn't know about them. Nick Foles is one of them, obviously, for the Philadelphia Eagles. He stepped in for Carson Wentz late in the season and won a Super Bowl. Then in Minnesota, I think, is the most interesting quarterback team in the league. They've got Case Keenum, who came in, and they went 14-2 with Case Keenum playing 15 of the 16 weeks. He can play. They've got Teddy Bridgewater, who has not been healthy but was very good, and the guys and the team loved him. The organization loved him when he was playing, but he's played very little, precious little. And, of course, Sam Bradford, who was the starter for the Vikings ahead of Case Keenum and then got hurt. Now, that's been his modus operandi. He's been hurt a lot during his career, and there's some rumblings about him maybe saying, listen, I've had it. I've been hurt too much, and I don't want to play. But he's a guy who is a starter-quality quarterback. So you got those three, Bradford, Keenum, and Bridgewater. How many of the Vikings? They're all free agents. How are the Vikings going to keep one or two or any of them if they can? Then there's Kirk Cousins and there's Nick Foles. But I'm telling you right now, folks, Nick Foles is not going anywhere out of Philly unless they trade him. He's cheap. He's got a year left on his deal. And they need him. Don't say, well, they've got Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is not going to be ready to play for the Philadelphia Eagles until November of next year. November, not training camp, not the first month of the season, not week one, not opening day, not the first four games. Carson Wentz is out, and he got hurt in December. There's no way he's going to come back from an ACL, MCL, in time to play. So they've got to have Nick Foles there to pick them up and give them a chance to repeat as champions. So Nick Foles is not going anywhere. Both those quarterbacks, Carson Wentz and Foles, are costing them less than the Bills are paying for Tyrod. You think they're going to make a move from that? They're not.
No.
They're just not. So Nick Foles is off the market. He's not going anywhere. There's no way the Eagles let that guy go. So your list is limited to everybody else.
The quarterback question is so interesting, not just for the Buffalo Bills, Steve, but you got Kirk Cousins on that list of potential free agents. Teddy Bridgewater, who's, to me, as Marshall, the caller, pointed out, is the ultimate risk-reward guy. It's a risk that he's going to be healthy, that he'll be back. But there were signs during his brief tenure as the starter for Minnesota that he could be a guy that you would build around. The Bills have kind of a whole card, in Tyrod Taylor under contract, obviously with a little bit more money to pay him come March 14 or March 17, whatever. That's a whole card that they have. They don't have to necessarily go out into that free agent market. You have all these rookies coming in. The big couple of big moves in quarterbacks made over the last couple of weeks, including Garoppolo, last week. But I get the sense that everybody else, all the quarterback needy teams, including the Buffalo Bills, are now just kind of everybody's waiting for somebody else to jump right now. You know what I mean? They're all kind of like eyeballing each other. Okay, we saw what happened already. Now somebody else make a move. Let's see, and there's going to be there's going to come a rush when people are bang, 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 quarterback moves.
It's in the move.
We're not there yet.
That's right. It's in the ballpark of the clubs now to trade guys.
Yeah.
Free agency hasn't started yet. And that's when that hits, there's no holds barred. And all these guys that we just mentioned, they're all going to make a ton of money. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Cousins. And what happens with Minnesota, because those are the four guys who can play. You know that you can plug them in. They're your starter, and you're going to go with those guys. Everybody else has got huge question marks around them, and the draft class as well. Unless you go and see, a young player, but know this: if you're going to draft a guy and jump into the top five to get him, it's going to be really hard to have that kid sit behind a player like Tyrod Taylor for a year, given what we already know about Tyrod.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard to let that kid simmer and get his feet under him in the pro game rather than just throw him in there and hope he doesn't sink.
Hey, over and since I was gone, and when you wrapped up things in Super Bowl City in Minnesota, Tyrod Taylor quoted in the Buffalo News as saying he is not of a mind to take another contract adjustment. Yeah. I don't blame him.
I don't either.
I don't know that he should have to. You know, and by the way, he has to say that now, whether or not he does when push comes to shove in March or even
at least
in June.
Publicly.
Yeah, he has to say that publicly.
Now, he may say have his agent or his representation say something different to the Bills and say, well, what are you talking about? At least listen to him, which I would say they probably will. But publicly, he's saying, I'm not really ready to do that. It better be, you know, I better like the deal or I'm not going to sign. And the deal, I mean, here's the problem, and this is a little complicated. We're going to walk through this Tyrod thing. If they hang on to him till June 1st, all the $18 million counts against the Bills' cap. If they release him after June 1st, then they save $16 million in cap space. But then again, they don't have a quarterback then either, right? Except it's, you know, Peterman, right? So up until June 1st, if they cut him, if they cut him before June 1st, all the $18 million goes on the cap this year. So that goes away from the payroll, and you're done. You have no Tyrod, and you have no cap space because you got $18 million taken off. So you can bet that the Bills won't release Tyrod or do anything with him until after June 1st because then that pushes the $18 million into next year's cap. So having said that, now you've got to figure out how are you going to build a team around your guy that puts the Bills in the position where they've got $18 million less of cap space to go out in free agency and sign all these guys because they got $18 million less to sign because they got to keep Tyrod on the roster. And now after June 1st, hopefully there'll be some free agent guys left over that they can go out and sign with the $18 million they save if they release Tyrod. Yeah. So they've got them. You know, they got that $18 million window that's going to close and open. If you've got it, you got a quarterback. If you don't, you don't have a quarterback, and you don't have the $18 million either. So it's complicated.
It's going to be fascinating.
I just butchered that explanation.
No, I got it.
You did? Yeah, that's because you've got it in front of you. You're reading, following along with me. But it's real complicated. But what it basically means is you can choose which year you want to take the $18 million hit with Tyrod.
Yeah.
You can release him now and take the $18 million hit this year, or release him after June 1st and push it off to 2019. If you push it off to 2019, you're not going to have that money to sign free agents. That made more sense.
That made more sense. More succinct. We want you to rank the Bills' offseason needs. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. By the way, speaking of the Bills and the 2018 season, season tickets are available right now, and you can get club seats. They're renovating the club seats, all new for 2018. But season tickets for the entire place, available now. Go to buffalobills.com/tickets to reserve non-club seats. You have to call 1-877-BB-TICKS. They're not available to reserve via the website. Season tickets, you know, you can get into a game for as low as $33 per game, $330 for the season. Lots of benefits, invitations to exclusive events like the draft party, play 60 events, training camp, Bills Bucks, access to the NFL Red Zone and Game Pass, much more. Bills season tickets now available. Call 1-877-BB-TICKS. And find out more about that. Steve Tasker here for Donald Jones. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back. John Murphy with Steve Tasker coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Pat McAfee will join us to talk about the Indianapolis Colts and the hiring of Frank Reich. We got a lot more to talk about as the show goes along. Want to know from you about the Bills' offseason personnel priority. What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Got a call here from Brandon in Oceanside, California. Hello, Brandon. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Hey, I just think quarterback number one, but outside that, I would go with interior defensive line. You had the trade of Darius last year. And then Kyle Williams is kind of uncertain. And then I think with that interior pass rusher, your outside pass rusher is more effective. Jerry Hughes is still effective. So that would be my number two after quarterback.
Interior defensive line. Not bad. Not bad. Given Kyle Williams' age, the departure of
I agree with that.
The departure of Marcell Dareus, I would think that would be somewhat on their list of priorities.
I think the whole D line is the priority, and I would rather take the player that you project as being better at his position, either whether it's a defensive tackle or defensive end edge rusher. If you got a defensive tackle that's one of those guys that's a 330-pound guy who's an athlete, and yes, they do exist. Grab him. Take a defensive tackle. Don't be afraid to take a guy who can play down inside and give you a good solid play. Kyle Williams has done it and been a huge factor in some pretty good defenses here in Buffalo because of his ability to do that. Get another one if you can find it. Don't think you have to have an edge rusher, but
right.
I do think you go defensive front and that front seven.
And by the way, Kyle Williams came in the fifth round.
Yeah.
If you can find the
Remember
next
they
Kyle
took
Williams
Eric
in the
Flowers
fifth round.
And they took Eric Flowers in the first.
Number one
and
overall.
Kyle Williams, and it's great. Yeah. Bill Kohler, the defensive line coach, I had a long conversation with him, and he goes, I could tell in 20 minutes which guy was going to be great. I was like, well, why didn't you do that before they picked,
Yeah.
But then again, Kyle Williams, he falls to the fifth round.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 32 teams passed over him five times, and
crazy.
He turns into a phenomenal player.
Dan calling from Rochester. Dan, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, I honestly think, the defense is strong enough to hold up by itself. I mean, it showed that.
When did they show that?
I would focus on quarterback. I mean, as far as, going through the options they all talked about earlier, Teddy's not an option. He hasn't played in 2 years. And if you look at the stats, he's Tyrod Taylor prior to the injury. Nick Foles is today's Joe Flacco, and you're going to have to give up way too much to get him. Bradford, he's fragile and really hasn't produced like he should have. I mean, I think the two options are either A.J. McCarron, who's shown he could play in the big games, or I think you pony up the pick, you get Kirk Cousins. It takes your offense to the next level because offensively, the Bills are stacked more than Washington. And, you draft a quarterback to develop behind.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but Kirk Cousins, you're going to have to – I mean, Kirk Cousins is leaving Washington because they couldn't strike a deal. I don't know whether he didn't want to play in Washington or whether the money was just going to get too great for them to do that. Alex Smith came $5 million less a year than what they were looking at paying Kirk Cousins as a franchise tag once again a franchise tag. So, he'd franchise 2 years in a row, and the number was going to be so outrageous – they released him, and I don't know whether Kirk Cousins is expecting that kind of thing or not. But let's face it, I don't think Kirk Cousins is as good as, Joe Flacco, to use your analogy. I'm intrigued by your mentioning of A.J. McCarron. Cincinnati, in the same article we've been looking at about who the neediest teams in the league are, they've got Cincinnati listed, and their number one priority is a quarterback. They don't like Andy Dalton.
Hey, a couple of things, Dan, that I just want to, circle back on. You said the Bills, you wouldn't worry about the Buffalo defense? Buffalo defense is okay in your mind?
I think the defense is strong enough right now to do what it needs to do, and you can fill that in later holes with the draft, kind of like what you were talking about with Kyle Williams. I don't think you go out and get like a Malcolm Butler or anything like that. Keep doing it. Sean McDermott's done a great job bringing in like a Micah Hyde, and a Poyer. Finding these guys that fit the scheme, very Belichick-esque, not to really throw out the Patriots in that, but he's done a really good job finding talent there. But, I mean, for years, what's been holding back the Bills has been the offense.
Hmm.
It's just trying to find that elusive quarterback.
It's a quarterback, no question.
Yeah, no question.
The other thing you mentioned, you believe, and you were talking about Cousins, you said the Bills are stacked more on offense than Washington? Other than Shady, where do you see that? How are they stacked more?
I believe so. I mean, you got, like, for example, okay, you got a phenomenal tight end in Washington with Reed. He can't stay healthy. I think if you put Cousins with Clay, I think that's a phenomenal ideal matchup. You give him a big wide receiver with Calvin Benjamin along with Zay Jones, bring in a slot guy. I automatically think Washington's receivers are better. The offensive line is about the same, and Shady McCoy – I mean, it speaks for itself, but I mean, realistically, I mean, he only has a year or two left at the production that he's given.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know if I agree with all of that or any of it, really, but it's an interesting take. I mean, I think the Bills have some holes on offense, wide receiver in particular. They need help at wide receiver.
Well, Benjamin's got to come back healthy.
Yeah, and even beyond that.
And Zay Jones has got to develop more. He did finally at the end of the year. You saw him make some clutch catches in moments where, you know, big down and distances, and he came through for him. He's got to do that more and more, and that's got to become part of his deal. Jordan Matthews, I liked him. I liked his attitude. I liked what he brought to the wide receiver room, and I think he really – you know, did some good things for them. Obviously, his health was never an issue in Philly, and yet here he is in Buffalo, and he's, you know, and he had two injuries, one right after he got here that hampered his ability to jump right in and play, and then late in the season he got hurt again. So that was, I think, unfortunate rather than telling about Matthews. I like their wide receiver. I'm with him. I like their wide receiver core here. I mean, Zay Jones has got to play better, but I think he can, and I think he will. There's nothing that says they can't go out and get some help for these guys either. But you know, the depth is one thing. But I think there are other places you got to look to find you know, some help. And what the caller was saying about the quarterback, absolutely. By hook or crook, I think the Bills are going to have a different signal caller next year. I don't think they're going to be able to make it with. I don't think they're going to make it work with Tyrod. Not that they can't make it work football wise, but I think contractually. And the point of the in history where the team is now, I think they're going to move on.
Hey, we're going to talk more about this, the Bills' needs. How would you prioritize their needs, their offseason personnel needs, as we are a couple of weeks away from free agency and a couple of months away from the NFL draft? Plus, we want to take a look around the league a little bit when we return. And what should the priorities be for the NFL to get their house in order in 2018? Take your thoughts on that as well. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Steve is in for Donald Jones, who is back tomorrow. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Quiet here, but there is action around the National Football League. Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator Frank Reich has been hired to be the next head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. He'll get a five-year deal, according to ESPN. Frank Reich, who played backup quarterback here for Jim Kelly and the Buffalo Bills, replaces Chuck Pagano after a search in Indy that took a few twists and turns, including the announcement last week that Josh McDaniels had agreed to take the job, and then he backed out. Frank Reich's hiring ends a six-week coaching search in which the Colts went from being the first of six teams to fire their coach to the last of the six to fill their opening. Frank Reich to be introduced tomorrow as the next head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, in an interview with Good Morning America today, said that he's been diagnosed as bipolar, and he's taking medication for it, and his goal is to get back on the football field. Manziel says he's diagnosed with bipolar disorder about a year ago, says he stopped drinking. He has used alcohol as a way of self-medicating, according to him. For the second time in less than a month, San Francisco 49ers linebacker Reuben Foster has been arrested. Reports in San Francisco say Foster was arrested earlier yesterday on charges related to domestic violence, threats, and possession of an assault weapon. He was transported and booked at the Santa Clara County Main Jail, where he was held on bail, released on bail on Sunday night. Buffalo Sabres announced yesterday that Jack Eichel has a high ankle sprain and is out indefinitely. Eichel leads the team with 22 goals, 31 assists, and 51 points in 55 games played. Last night, Sabres lost to Colorado 5-4 at KeyBank Center. Despite shorthanded goals from Benoit Pouliot and Casey Nelson, Nelson became the second player in Sabres history to score his first career goal shorthanded. Tampa Bay comes to town tomorrow night to play the Sabres. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. And Canisius, winners of 13 of their last 14, the men's basketball team, home tonight against the Fairfield Stags. That's a 7 o'clock tip-off at the Kessler Center. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy alongside Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones. Donald rejoins us tomorrow talking about a lot of things today, including this, Steve, which just crossed the wire. And this I know you will be interested in. An announcement from the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the Canadian Football League. The Tiger Cats have announced that they've signed one Luke Tasker to a two-year contract extension. He was eligible to be a free agent The quote from June Jones, Hamilton Ticat, Luke is a leader in our locker room, has developed into one of the best receivers in the Canadian Football League. It was important to have him back. Your son Luke, 27 years of age, 18 games played last year, 104 catches, 1,100 yards, 7 touchdowns, set a club record for most receptions in a season. Took a look around, right? He had a tryout with the Jets.
Yeah, I knew they agreed to it just before the weekend. He said he was going to go up there today, and they signed today. He was looking at free agency and then just did an evaluation of where he was at in his career and what the market was going to be. And, you know, he likes Hamilton. He likes it a lot, not only for the sake of his wife and their new baby, but also, you know, me and his family here and his wife's family is here at Buffalo. We go up and we're at all the home games we can make, and it's been a great experience for him. So yeah, it's we're stoked. He loves the contract, he loves the city, and he's going to stay.
He must like the Canadian Football League, the different style of play there too, right?
Yeah, and it's good for him too. The big field gives him some space to work in. He did have a work. He actually, you know, we talked about it before. He worked out with the Jets here this off season, but. And decided to go ahead and accept, you know, this deal from the Ticats, and we're all stoked about it. Yeah, he was going. They had the press conference this morning at about 11.
Good for him. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're really excited about
it. You gotta be. Yeah, having him close to home means a lot, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, it means everything. It's great, and he's looking for a good year. June Jones really has invigorated the club, and they've signed a couple of wide receivers that are actually track guys, which is he is not Luke. But it's going to be a pretty good team. We're excited about their season coming up.
All right. Luke Tasker re-signs with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. We're talking about the Bills today. Our Twitter poll, Sports Illustrated, lists the Bills as the third neediest team in the National Football League behind the Jets and behind the Cleveland Browns. What do you think about that? And how would you rank the Bills' offseason personnel needs? Our Twitter poll's been up and running. The one option we give you, ranking them as quarterback, linebacker, center, edge rusher, 40% of you say that's the way to look, 42%. Quarterback, wide receiver, center, linebacker, 25%. Wide receiver, quarterback, edge rusher.
We
like
got to talk
said,
about
it's like
some,
a Chinese
little,
restaurant.
It's a Chinese restaurant here with two from column A, one from column B. But, yeah, I mean, let's prioritize it. I mean, there's no question that this is a roster that we even said, even when we got in when the Bills got to the playoffs, that it was a little bit flawed, and they got in due to the entire roster coming together and playing really good enough in so many games that they could do it. And they got in, and at the end of the season, at the end of 16 weeks, they were the last team in the AFC side, and they got in with a little help at the end. But, you know, that be that as it may, that's where the chips fell, and they got in. You really got to tip your hat to Sean McDermott, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean and the roster they built. Never, no question that it's going to be difficult to repeat that with, you know, another year. But they do have more draft capital this year to horse trade with than they did last year, and I think it's going to be fun to watch. I don't think there's any doubt, and we talked about this a ton. You throw out all these mock drafts because nobody's going to pick where there's a lot of to pick right now. There's going to be a lot. I say nobody. You know, the Bills are not going to pick 21-22. I just do not believe it. I think they're going to move up into the top 10, top 5 someplace. And if they don't, they're going to trade one of those picks anyway to get some picks and some other players, and they're going to package it. I just think the Bills showed too much of a willingness to make trades with players and picks and stuff, particularly on draft day last year, that I just don't believe they're going to be satisfied with where they sit and the way the draft is going
to
fall.
We got a lot to talk about, and let's hear from you. The line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Dominic calling from Amherst. Hello, Dominic. Welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
All right. So, Steve just kind of answered my question. I was just looking at a mock draft. I know it's way too early to look at a mock draft, but most of them have us taking a wide receiver. And I know that's a big need, but I was asking, like, is it really that big of a need to, if someone like James Washington or Cortland Sutton falls, is that really if they fell and we stayed at 21 or 22, is that, do you guys really think that that's, realistic for us to take one of those guys?
Well, if they get down to 21, 22, Dominic, yeah, they'll pick anybody. Anybody's on the table because you're at that point, you're down deep enough into the draft that some of these other players, even at positions of need, they're just not going to be there. you know, the quarterback's going to be gone. You're going to be talking about maybe taking the kid from Western Kentucky or somebody like that at quarterback. And they may take him one of those spots, and they may take a wide receiver. You're going to pick, if you're going to pick consecutive picks at 21, 22, it doesn't matter which way you pick them or who you pick first. But the simple fact of the matter is that you're right. Once you get down to the 21, 22 spot, it's hard to dive that deep and know or get a good feel for what team is going to pick who. Even the teams behind us at 22, all the way from 23 to 32, it's a crapshoot as to who those guys are going to pick because you don't know how the top of the draft is going to fall. And like I told you, Dominic, I don't believe the Bills are picking 21, 22. I think those picks are going to be one, at least one of them won't be there.
Here's a call from Paul in Kenmore with some thoughts on the Bills at wide receiver. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, John, I'd like to say that, Devon Thompson is better than some of the other wide receivers that the Bills have on the team.
Deontay Thompson, is that who you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay.
That the Bills should keep him.
Okay, I mean, they might.
Yeah, he's a pending free agent.
Yep.
So, and let's face it, I don't think, you know, he's not going to cost him $7 million
nope.
a year, that's for sure. I mean,
he's not going to make or break a season.
Right,
either,
and I know this too. You got, and here's the thing that's hard for us in Buffalo to know, and man, Paul makes a good point. You want to pick a guy, you want to keep a guy like Deontay Thompson. The problem is every other team, or maybe not to the extent the Bills are, but every other team's got their list of guys that are coming out too as free agents. Mm-hmm. There might be some guys around the league from, you know, from Arizona, from Seattle, from L.A., from Kansas City that are going to come out on the market that our guys will know about much more so than we maybe even know about Deontay Thompson. I mean, they know they want that guy. They've got him slotted like they did with Micah Hyde last year, like they did with Jordan Poyer last year. They've got some guys on their line that they want to go after. And so as hard as it is to let some of the guys on the list go, like Preston Brown, like E.J. Gaines, like Chantrell Henderson, there are some guys out there that are going to be pretty attractive free agents for the Bills to grab as well. And while, you know, Deontay Thompson is going to be a guy who you may like and he may be able to produce for us, Jarvis Landry is going to be on the market. I mean, guys like that are going to be out there.
Yeah.
Landry's not. They may not get that deal done in Miami. And if they do, it's good for the Bills.
Here's Tony and Clarence. Go ahead, Tony. You're on the air.
Yes, congratulations to Steve's family on having that signing with his son, first of all.
Thanks, Tony.
My opinion is, unless you have an offensive line that you can really build a strong offensive line, how are you going to get a quarterback killed? In the last, you had our quarterback running around because the line wasn't good enough in many games. I mean, you got to have a strong offensive line. And think about it, Steve. Ken Hall called all those plays and all those formations over the years you were there. Without a strong center making those calls, what are we going to do? I mean, you're asking if the Bills to draft somebody. They're not going to draft in the first five, are they?
Well, if they can, they probably will, but I don't know that they're going to be able to make that happen. But, Tony, your point's well taken. They got to have a strong offensive line. And I think on the other side, they got to have a defensive line, too. I think that's where the best teams have their best players, or at least a dominant group of guys who play well together and who can play against any team in the NFL, offensively or defensively. So I get you, Tony. You're right. You could bring Johnny Unitas in here or Joe Montana or Jim Kelly or anybody. They're not going to play well if the offensive line can't protect him. But this is an offensive line who, for up until this year, was a group of guys who, you know, led the league in rushing.
Right.
Their quarterback didn't get sacked, and their quarterback didn't turn it over very much. They didn't give up those sack strip fumbles. This is a pretty good offensive line, and I don't want to say they're the best offensive line in football, but they're certainly not a group that is going to jeopardize the ability of whatever quarterback you get in here to be successful. So while I do agree with your premise, I don't think this is an offensive line that's bad. I don't think it's the top priority to go out and get a tackle in the first round of this draft or even a guard in the first round of this draft. And like we said earlier, even center, Groy is a great player, a good player that I think is going to be able to play very well for the Bills. So I agree with your premise, but I think the offensive line here in Buffalo is at a level where you can look other places to improve because there are some deficiencies around them.
Yeah, Groy is there to replace Eric Wood. He's there. He's under contract. He's got the starts. He's got the resume. He's the guy.
It's different going out and getting some depth behind Groy,
right.
Some depth behind John Miller. You know, it's different than going out there and get some depth behind the offensive line you've got. That's good, but you're not going to waste a number one draft pick on a guy who's depth. You're going to get him in the free agency, or you're going to get him some other way in the late rounds of the draft, if at all. So I think, you know, these draft picks we're talking about, 21, 22, or in the top 10, or the top 5, or wherever they move up to or move back to, you know, they're not going to be guys who are there for depth.
Yeah.
They want them. They're going to be guys they have pegged to be starters.
And the other thing about there's depth. You alluded to it in the first hour. There's depth at tackle too. You know, with Chantrell Henderson, who still I think has something to offer. Jordan Mills now has started for a couple of years.
Chantrell's going to be a free agent probably, but
he is something.
But he's there. Yeah,
he could be valuable. I think Deion Dawkins shows enormous promise. I'm almost thinking, Steve, they could dangle Cordy Glenn in a trade if they need to move up and get a player they covet, maybe even a quarterback in the first round. Now, Cordy Glenn's got a big contract, which will make it a difficult contract to trade, but they've got enough depth at offensive tackle, I think, that they're covered there. I think they're covered on the interior. They have Ryan Groy at center. I do not look at that as a priority area for them to look at this offseason.
I agree. I mean, they're going to have to get some guys in. I mean, they're going to sign probably 4 or 5 offensive linemen for training camp, all with the idea that they're going to compete to start or compete for playing time and compete to make the roster. But they like the guys they've got. I'd be shocked if I found out they didn't like the guys they've got,
yeah,
because they've all had significant playing time because of injuries. Cordy in and out of the lineup last year helped the team find out that Deion Dawkins can play. And the same thing all the way across the line. Groy's been here for a couple of years. They know he can play behind Eric Wood. They know he can play and get plugged in, and he's not going to miss a beat. So you can say there's no question he may not be the same center Eric Wood was, but there may be things that Groy does better than Wood was able to do. So overall, I don't think there's going to be like this massive drop-off in the offensive line play because you exchange Ryan Groy for Eric Wood.
Let's go to Tom calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Tom. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Always appreciate the show, John.
Sure, thanks.
Steve, it's an honor. I know you're tired of hearing all this year after year, but I had season tickets the 4 magical years. I was there for all 4 AFC championship games, the greatest comeback game. I just want to thank you for everything you've done for the Bills during your career and after your career. You make everything very, very palatable. You know, I want you to get into the Hall of Fame for all kinds of reasons, Steve. You legitimized the, you know, the position of special teams, which was not really, you know, now they kick it into the end zone all the time. But we had a banner that we had hung up on your side of the field, and it said Tasker Time. And I was wondering if you ever looked up and saw it. If you didn't, that's no big deal because your head was in the game. But you made special teams play like you put it on the map, Steve, and I want to thank you immensely for that.
Well, I appreciate all that, and I do remember seeing that banner as well, so I appreciate that as well. What else is on your mind?
Yes, well, congratulations on your son's DNA. I'm wondering if your wife had a little bit to do with that too, maybe?
Probably more so than you give me credit. He's as you said, all that leadership stuff and that Murph read off about what June Jones said. He's been a really good teammate. It's been a great experience. So I'm the only thing I can really contribute to him is one more guy in his corner cheering for him on game day, but it's been fun.
Well, listen, you were the main 89 on the Bills, and my man Alexander McGillney had a pretty famous 89 too. So
that's the one Sabres jersey I'd get.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
My son and I always talk about what Sabres. I'd get one of the military camo jerseys with 89 on the back and McGillney.
Because of 89, or because
of
Alex?
Yeah, because of Alex and the number's mine, but the number for the Sabres is his, so
yeah.
I'd wear that and wear
cool.
His number. Listen, I don't want to get on. Go ahead, Tom. Do you have anything
else?
Gone.
Tom's gone.
Okay.
An interesting compliment for you when he said you made things palatable. That's like a left. That's a classic left-handed compliment. There's, yeah, like, I think rough, I don't know if you meant
well,
that.
Well, it's been 17 Steve, years
thank
of
you
rough,
for making things
rough
palatable.
Waters. 17 years of not so tasteful stuff. You know.
Thank you for helping these last 17 years go down a little bit easier. That's what he's saying.
We
basically
all do what we can.
It wasn't Murph. Like making things great, or it was like you made things palatable. We were able to handle it with you around. Steve Tasker is making things palatable for the next hour and a half. When we come back, Mike Mayock made an appearance on our flagship station here in Buffalo, WGR, today, and he talked about some of the quarterbacks in this year's draft, all of it leading to our Twitter poll and what our topic of the day is. That, of course, is off-season priorities for the Bills, off-season personnel priorities. We also want to get to what the NFL has in its list of priorities. I promise we'll get to that. Come on back for more. Steve is here to make things palatable. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy with Steve Tasker coming to you live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Pat McAfee joined us at 2 o'clock. Do you know him, Steve, former NFL punter?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a character.
I mean, we don't exchange Christmas cards or anything, but yeah, I know him.
He's a character. Interested in his take on Frank Reich. I think he loves the hire of Frank Reich at the Indianapolis Colts. I'm telling you, they are better off with Frank Reich than they are with Josh McDaniels. There's absolutely no question.
I mean, I know I've got – I'm invested in Frank Reich and because he's a friend. But I think he's a better fit.
Yeah.
I think he's a better fit. I'm with you. I just hope it turns into one of those stories that what might have been if Sean or Josh McDaniels had taken the job and, you know, Frank Reich wins a couple of Super Bowls with the Indianapolis. I don't want to wish all that on him.
That's a lot of pressure to put on your buddy.
At the expense of the Bills. But, you know, you just wish – it's like everybody knows this. When you have a buddy and something good, you just wish the best for him. And you know he's – I know he's ready for this. I know he's prepared himself for it, and, you know, and now he's got to get ready for the draft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the draft, Mike Mayock, NFL draft analyst for NFL.com. We had him on the show about a week or so before the Senior Bowl. Or no, it was before the Jacksonville game, before the Bills game against Jacksonville, because you worked with him in that game, didn't you? Were you on the radio side that day? Wasn't he in the booth?
Yeah, yeah. Bills
at Jacksonville.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I've worked with them. It's the only time I've worked with them.
Mike is with NFL.com. He is their draft guru, one of them anyway. And he appeared on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550 this morning with Howard and Jeremy. Talking about quarterbacks, kind of, and that leads into our discussion of what the Bills' priorities are. Draft quarterbacks this year. We know it's a pretty good draft class overall. Mike Mayock talked a little bit about this draft class and about Josh Rosen of UCLA as potentially being the most NFL-ready quarterback coming out in this year's draft.
Now, they all have some holes. Most of them are underclassmen, but there's an awful lot of talent in this class. And I also think there's some depth in the class that we don't usually see, meaning some quarterbacks like a Luke Falk or a Mike White, guys that don't have the same buzz as the first-round guys, but might go in the second, third, fourth round that are kind of interesting also. Let me put it this way. Josh Rosen from UCLA is the most pure thrower that I've seen in a while. That doesn't mean he's the best quarterback, but as far as talent, as far as an ability to make every throw on balance, accuracy at all three levels, he's outstanding. And if you're play a flag football game, he's your guy. Now, and I don't mean that as a negative to him. I'm just saying he throws the football beautifully. I've got a bunch of questions about whether or not he can survive an NFL pocket. And that becomes a completely legitimate conversation as to, okay, he's not as athletic as I thought he'd be. He was a good tennis player as a kid. He looks athletic, but he can't get out of trouble. And he also has a very steep frame. And when you combine those two, you worry about durability. And then you look at him as a three-year starter. He missed half of 2016 with a shoulder injury. And then this year he had two concussions. So regardless of which quarterback you guys want to talk about today, there's going to be some potential and upside on one side, and there's going to be a couple concerns on the other side.
Mike Mayock, NFL Network, talking about Josh Rosen at UCLA. The phrase "damning him with faint praise" comes up, Steve, when he talked about he's a great thrower, make all the throws, any platform you want, but there are the other issues too. They're all going to have holes in their game, and Mayock said that. But I would be concerned about some of those things that Mike Mayock.
Well, those are the concerns that you have for Josh Rosen. there are bigger, more pressing concerns with the other guys.
Yeah.
And can he, for instance, Darnold, can if he was standing on a dock in Lake Erie, can he hit the water? You know, I mean, you don't know if the guy can throw it into a tight window every time. There's some guys that Josh Allen from Wyoming, you don't know if he's going to get into the pro game and then wilt, you know, with all the physical talent that he has. And he is probably as big and physical a talent as there is in this draft. You know, he was playing against – he was playing in the schoolyard, you know, for the most part. He was up in Wyoming. He wasn't playing against Alabama, Ohio State. And you don't know what's going to happen if his players – or if he's not the best player on the field, you know, how's he going to react to that? So every player's got holes in their game. Every player's got huge question marks, and some of them, you just have to pick which question marks you can live with.
You mentioned Josh Allen, the Wyoming quarterback, who was pretty solid in his week at the Senior Bowl a couple of weeks ago. Chris Brown down there chronicling that for us. Mike Mayock was there as well. And he was asked this morning on his appearance with Howard and Jeremy on WGR about Wyoming's Josh Allen. Here's what Mike Mayock had to say.
I'm not worried about his overall numbers. I'm worried about one number, and that's his career accuracy number, which is 56%. Now, he only threw the ball 649 times in his collegiate career. That's very similar to Wentz. Almost every other quarterback in the draft has thrown it over 1,000 times. So you're looking at a limited repertoire of throws, and at 56%, that's my biggest – the biggest question I have on this kid, aside from he still has – he's very raw, is – okay, very rarely do college quarterbacks with poor accuracy numbers all of a sudden come into the NFL and increase the percentages by 5 to 10%, which is what this kid is going to have to do to become a successful quarterback in the NFL. And therefore, you've got to sit down and really break him down as to why is his number 56%. And part of my answer is from his footwork, his feet. I think he gets himself in trouble when – doesn't reestablish his feet underneath him. He's so athletic, he thinks he could make a lot of throws, and then he throws from an awkward platform, and the ball comes out wild, and he wonders why. So I think he's going to have to be rebuilt a little bit from the ground up.
Mike Mayock on Josh Allen, the Wyoming quarterback. That is going to scare a lot of teams away, that sort of evaluation, the lack of accuracy, the building the mechanics from the ground up, the footwork from the ground up. That's a project. Do you want to use a premium first-round pick on a project quarterback? I don't know. I wouldn't.
If you've got a guy like Kyle Shanahan, Doug Peterson now is in that group,
yep.
Frank Reich's in that group, you name your organization that can has got a quarterback whisperer, maybe you do.
Yeah.
Maybe you do. Maybe
you got to invest time.
Maybe
you can't
if,
say we're
maybe
playing
if you're
your
a team
year.
Like maybe if you're a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Ben Roethlisberger's thinking, okay, this is going to be my last year, and you can get a guy like that if you wanted to trade up, and put some assets into that and get the guy, and you've got a group a team that could set him for a year even at a high draft pick because you've got an established legendary guy. No doubt, but with those kind of question marks, I always has listen. I get what Mike's saying about his mechanics and the guy and the ball flutters on him a little bit and you know he's throwing with his feet not set and he has to. Well, you're gonna have to make those throws in the NFL. They said the same thing about Phillip Rivers. His delivery's funky. They're gonna have to build and rebuild and that. You know what? They didn't, and he was more than fine.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with a guy who's been successful with a different delivery or with a way to play the game who does it and can do it. So, yeah, I get it. But if you've got the people around him to make that kid develop, all you need him to do is improve all the time. Whether he changes his footwork or whatever, or for me, quarterback is all about what's between the ears once you've got the physical talent. If you've got a coaching staff that can push those buttons and get him on the right track mentally – you know, that's the battle right there.
And you better be ready to invest some time, though. You better not say we're drafted him
well,
and
listen,
we're going to play him.
But here's the thing. That's a given. There's no NFL team that won't dedicate a 24/7 round-the-clock support staff to the kid. What happens is the kid gets drafted and he decides he's already made it and he doesn't want to put in the time.
Yeah, but what also happens is teams don't have success, quarterbacks struggle, and all of a sudden the clamor is for, well, we got this new guy. Let's play him now. Let's throw him in the fire, see what he can do. I mean, shoot, the Bills did it with a fifth-round pick this year. Nathan Peterman threw him in the fire. You know, and that's the temptation teams have when they're struggling in the passing game.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a mistake. Listen,
and that's not going to change. That's not going to change. That's the game. That's the league. That you're, if your team's struggling, they need a spark, they're going to pull the plug on a 5-2 team. And if you're throwing for less than 100 yards, they don't care if you're winning by two. If you can get one or two more plays out of that position in a game and start winning easier and winning games you maybe shouldn't win anyway, you're going to make that move.
One more soundbite from Mike Mayock, NFL Network's Mike Mayock. He appeared with Howard and Jeremy this morning on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Those guys got to the point of asking Mike Mayock, all right, what if the Bills don't move up, get the premium pick, move up somehow and get into the top 10, top 5 when it comes to quarterbacks? Who would be left down there, 21 and 22? Lamar Jackson, Louisville, Mason Rudolph. Are these the type of quarterbacks that will be there? And what is should the interest level be with those type of quarterbacks? Here's what Mike Mayock of the NFL Network had to say about that.
Then you get to Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph, mm-hmm. who are polar opposites, but both intriguing. Lamar Jackson thing, here's what I would say to you guys. Michael Vick was the first overall pick in the draft years ago, right? This kid is just as fast with as much or more running ability than Michael Vick did, and his arm is just as whippy, just as big as Michael Vick. And he's not very accurate, and he makes a lot of mistakes in the pass game, but he's the most electrifying running quarterback I've seen maybe in my life. And he's going to make plays in the NFL. Deshaun Watson came in and made plays immediately. Now, Deshaun's a more polished thrower. Yeah. But this kid's going to make plays with his legs. And somebody's going to fall in love with that. Somebody who feels like they can convert their offense and commit to this kid. The concern's going to be durability / injury. But he's intriguing. He's a playmaker. You got to put on a different hat when you look at him and say, this is who we're going to be. And then there's Mason Rudolph, who is a pocket quarterback. He's got a good but not a great arm. He's got the kind of a Kirk Cousins arm, which is more than enough in the NFL. He's accurate at all three levels, might be the most accurate deep ball quarterback of the draft. Not great escapability, again. Mm-hmm. He's another one of those guys who can't move a whole lot and has got to throw with anticipation, timing, and accuracy.
Mike Mayock on a couple of quarterbacks, Mason Rudolph, and before that, talking about Lamar Jackson. It's an interesting quarterback field, Steve, and an interesting array of options for the Buffalo Bills. I think, given we all can agree, the Bills need to come out of this offseason with quarterbacks, plural, I believe, one in the draft, probably one in free agency or through a trade. How they manage to make that happen, I think that's still being formulated with kind of an ever-changing landscape around the league. Things happened pretty quickly last week. Garoppolo off the market last week. Things change pretty quickly now, and I think the Bills have probably set themselves up to be ready to move as soon as things get hopping here in the next couple of weeks or so.
I agree, and I think one of the things that you forget as well is and I've always said this, and I'll say it again. I mean, people are going to get – the regular listeners of the show get tired of hearing me say it. The best free agents out there are coordinators. Those are the guys that make a big difference. Those are the guys that all of a sudden you got the same players and things change for your team. Defensive coordinators are notorious for doing that. Jim Schwartz, the Bills fans saw that a few years ago here, and now in Philadelphia they're seeing the same thing. The Bills hired Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator this offseason, and I have really high hopes, and I'm kind of stoked that they got him back here in Buffalo. This is a guy with a really good pedigree who's had some really good success, who – spent time in New England. He spent time around the league. He's just a guy who is a very, very qualified coordinator who knows what quarterbacks can offer and what they can't. And he just this last year, he was in Alabama as their offensive coordinator, and he got a national championship ring. He's the guy that called that last pass play going deep down the sideline that won Alabama the national championship. I think he's going to make a difference for whoever is pulling the trigger. I think he could make a difference for Nathan Peterman. He could make a difference for Tyrod Taylor. He's going to be a difference maker for the Bills. I believe that. That's why they made the move. There's no doubt in my mind that the most important coaches behind head coaches in the NFL are the coordinators, and the Bills got, a really good one. So no question they're going to have a different guy pulling the trigger here in Buffalo. And all these young draft picks that we're talking about are really intriguing in a lot of different ways. And I'm still – and we've talked about this a ton too. I don't know if Donald and I were talking this last week. I'm not done with Nathan Peterman.
Oh no,
I want to see what I want to see what he can do when you know he can get a chance to play enough where he can calm down a little bit and not feel like the weight of the world is on his shoulders every snap.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on here, but there's no doubt that the Bills are going to find a way to get more than one quarterback in here, and it's going to be fun to watch them develop them.
All right, we're going to get your thoughts on where the Bills stand as far as their priorities for offseason moves. What position groups would you prioritize for the Bills? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It is the John Murphy Show with Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones today. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in studio with us, talking about the Bills' priorities. What should they be? Offseason personnel priorities. Give us a call. Here's a call from Ted in Niagara Falls. Go ahead, Ted. You're on the air.
Hi, Steve. This is Ted, and I'd like to say hi to John also. I'm listening to you guys every day.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate that.
I've been a football player for a while. I was back in the Milk Bowl back at the old Bill Stadium back in 1969. I played on a team with Lyle Zato in 1971 at Yankton College in South Dakota.
So really?
I think I kind of know a little bit about football.
Sure you do.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, well, this is my thoughts. First of all, we got a new offensive coordinator, and I'm going to agree with you guys that football evolves around their coordinators, whether defensively, offensively, and a head coach. Well, I think Tyrod Taylor is a very adequate quarterback. He's not dynamic in a lot of ways other than his running, probably. And he throws a nice deep ball if we got a wide receiver to catch it. So I'm going to say I want to stay with Tyrod Taylor another year. And let's see what this coordinator can make of our quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you don't want to spend the whole farm on one guy just to get a quarterback that may have some question marks anyway, better to spend the money on an entire roster and then go with what you've got and try and make it do with Tyrod. Now, how much though? I mean, are you willing to give Tyrod a $6 million boost and go, you know, along with $18 million? I mean, are you willing to kind of jump the ante with Tyrod, Ted?
No, I don't think so. I think what's the total this year would be with the $6 million boots. It's only still around $18 million.
That's about right.
Quarterback, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's below market value for you know the elite guys for sure.
Right.
Considering that Garoppolo just signed for $27.5 million a year for 5 years, that's a pretty good. Or no, for 6 years. Well, that's pretty good money.
A couple good players they could have picked up probably with that price.
There you go.
Anyhow, I'm a believer in defense. So with that first draft choice, of course, I want to go for the best, biggest, meanest defensive lineman I can find.
Okay.
My thought. And then maybe that second pick in that first round, maybe I'd like to try to pick up maybe a lower spot in the first with a second or a third round, if possible. Or
you know, trade down?
The second and third. Trade down for that one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that, listen to – how about Ted, the old grizzled
making the
football
moves.
Warrior, making the moves. I like it, though, Ted. I like your – listen, nobody dislikes Tyrod because he's a bad guy. The team love him. He's a great locker room guy. He works hard at it. It's important to him. He does a lot of great things. He's got a lot of statistics that, while they're not flashy, they're very good. He doesn't turn the football over. For a team like the Buffalo Bills put together this year, that was paramount to their success. He also can turn over a third down into a first down with his legs once in a while. Tyrod did a lot of great things, a lot of things that really helped this team get into the playoffs. The problem is, like Tyrod, and for a lot of us who watch the Bills and watch other teams as well, you have one of those quarterbacks that at times you're completely frustrated with him because he'll miss an open guy. He won't find the open man, or he'll miss a throw that's easy, or a throw won't be just in the right spot, and it costs him a conversion. You know, there's just so many things that are frustrating about Tyrod, particularly in a team that is pushing for a playoff spot. When you get that idea that, man, if he just made this one play or that other play, we would have won the game. And that's the frustration that comes with a tie rod, yeah, along with all the good stuff.
I mean, the Jacksonville playoff game, they're a play away.
One play.
From advancing in the playoffs. You know how huge that would have been? And, you know, the 31st ranked passing attack in the NFL for a couple of years running, they need to get better at that. They know that. They definitely need to get better at that.
And if Tyrod's going to be better than that, even if he gets them up into, like, maybe, you know, 22nd in the league in passing, you know that's going to come with, you know, more turnovers because he's going to be risking more. He's going to throw a few more interceptions. You know, balls are going to get tipped, or he's going to throw it to the wrong jersey.
But you know what, Steve? After 3 years of Tyrod, I don't think he'll ever be that guy. You know, we've talked to his quarterback coaches in here before. You know, we've talked to the coordinators. They've talked to him about taking chances, anticipating windows, forcing the ball sometimes, you know, risking interceptions. Just doesn't happen with him.
That's the philosophy. You know what you've got. Can you be good enough with what you got to go forward and bolster everything else that you don't have? And that's a great question. Now, and two, to Tyrod's credit, he is making the kind of money he's supposed to make at that slot,
yep,
with that kind of production.
To the Bills' credit, too.
To their credit.
Yeah.
He is totally in line with the budget. And the Bills, to their credit, have built the roster around him to be good enough, even without a pass rush. They got into the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
So they're good at building a roster. Can they do it again this year with Tyrod and the production he gave them? Because let's face it, he is what he is. No question about it. This is his eighth or ninth year coming up. He's been around long enough to have gotten, you know what he's going to be. And it's a question of, is he worth the money? Which the market says, yeah, he is. But do you want to take another step?
Right. How would you prioritize the Bills' personnel needs this offseason? Want to get more of your thoughts on that in the third and final hour of the show. Want to talk more about the Indianapolis Colts. They're ready to hire Frank Reich as their new head coach. Pat McAfee was the punter for the Colts for 8 seasons. He is also a popular host of the Pat McAfee Show, a podcast on Barstool Sports. He's going to join us live coming up next on the show. Come on back for that. You don't want to miss it. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network, sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive, the NFL news from Indianapolis today, where the Indianapolis Colts are ready to announce Frank Reich as their head coach tomorrow. Reich serving as the Eagles offensive coordinator the last 2 years will get a 5-year deal, according to ESPN. He replaces Chuck Pagano as head coach of the Colts, a search that took some twists and turns last week when Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels agreed to take the job, and then after an introductory news conference was scheduled, McDaniels pulled out. Frank Reich, who's been around the league for a long time, obviously a player with the Buffalo Bills. He's 56 years old, 2 weeks in Philadelphia, helping the Eagles offense. Reich did not call plays with the Eagles, but he's also been around the Indianapolis Colts and the San Diego Chargers and Arizona Cardinals. Will be introduced at a news conference in Indianapolis tomorrow. Johnny Manziel told Good Morning America today that he is bipolar. He's been diagnosed as bipolar, and he's taking medication for it. Manziel says he was diagnosed about a year ago. He says he stopped drinking and says he does plan to get back on the football field in some way. Reuben Foster, for the second time this offseason, San Francisco 49ers linebacker, has been arrested. Police confirmed last night that Foster was arrested earlier yesterday on charges related to domestic violence, threats, and possession of an assault weapon. Buffalo Sabres back in action tomorrow night to host the Tampa Bay Lightning. Puck drop 7 o'clock, and tonight the Lightning take on Toronto at Air Canada Center. Sabres announced yesterday that center Jack Eichel has a high ankle sprain. He is out indefinitely. Eichel leads the team with 22 goals and 31 assists. And college basketball tonight, the Canisius College Golden Griffins, winners of 13 of their last 14, finish off a 3-game homestand tonight against the Stags of Fairfield. Fairfield coming off a 12-point loss at Niagara a couple of days ago. Canisius 17-9 overall, 11-2 in league play, second place in the Metro Atlantic Conference. Tip-off 7 o'clock tonight at the Kessler Center. Canisius hosting Fairfield. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones. Donald rejoins us on the show tomorrow. Joining us on the show right now, longtime special teamer. Oh, not yet. He's going to call in any minute now. Pat McAfee is going to join us. And you know Pat McAfee. I'm thinking to myself, we got two of the premier special teamers of recent NFL history coming up with you and Pat McAfee.
Well, he was a punter.
Wait a minute.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was a real, he had a real position.
Oh, I thought you were going the other way with that.
No. No, I mean, he was a respected guy. He did it for a long time.
You were pretty respected as well, but give us your thoughts on what the Bills' priorities are as they move into the offseason. You can rank them on Twitter at John Murphy Show. You can phone us up, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Jim Kendall tweets in, you're forgetting defensive tackle. Darius gone, Kyle Williams probably the same. Second biggest need to me after quarterback. Defensive line, we had a caller about this earlier, interior defensive line. I think edge rusher is important for the Bills. Scott Polichet tweets in, in rebuilds, this is an interesting concept. Wide receiver should not be a priority. Quarterback, O-line, D-line, way more important. Wide receiver should be late round or post-draft pickup. There's an argument to be made there.
There's no question. Yeah. I get an offensive line, defensive line, because that makes even when it's, you know, and it's hard for everybody to find a quarterback. You know, it seems like it's so easy. Sitting here in Buffalo when we've been without an elite quarterback since, you know, 1995, 96, these quarterbacks seem to parachute into all these other clubs, but they're hard to get for everybody. And in the meantime, you need to maximize your team's ability to make it easier on a lesser quarterback or a lesser running back or lesser skill players, and you do that by bolstering your offensive and defensive line. It makes everything so much easier out away from the football when you've got down close to the football in the O-line, D-line to be a really dominant group. You got a dominant group on either side of the ball. I mean, Dallas proved it 2 years ago with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. That team was loaded at their offense. It was like an offensive line like nobody's seen before, and carried them to the playoffs with the two rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. And, you know, then they lose both guards, and now it's not so great down there.
How difficult might it be, Stephen? This has come up a couple of times already on this show about the Bills standing pat, drafting a quarterback, let's say, a developmental type quarterback, or even using a fairly high round on a quarterback, and standing pat with Tyrod Taylor. How difficult a sell would that be for this fan base? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. That's Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, I know Sean McDermott isn't concerned with the sell. He will only do it if he's convinced it's the best course of action. If it's the best course of action, it will prove to be the right thing, and the fans will come. You know, the fans will buy into it when they see the result, and he has to have confidence in that result. As far as selling season tickets, listen, this is a club that made it to the playoffs with a roster that was really flawed, with a coaching staff that got the most out of it. So I think they've done. Yeah, I don't think they're going to – that's not the list. That's not high on their list.
Yeah.
Now, there's people in the organization, that's the only thing on their list is how to sell this. But that's not the football end of it. And their end of it is about winning games, and that's where it starts and ends. They're going to give themselves the best chance to win with making the move, whatever it is, whether it's sticking with Tyrod, paying Tyrod, or cutting Tyrod. They're going to go with what the best move they can for the future of this club, both now and the future, that is.
And there's no problems if that's the course they choose to pursue. I don't know that it will be, but if they choose to bring Tyrod back, there would be no problem selling that in the locker room, right? I mean, these players know what happened last year. They know how the Bills made the move to Peterman and then came out of it, went back to Tyrod. But I think Tyrod has earned such respect and really affection from many of his Buffalo Bill teammates that wouldn't be an issue at all.
He's an outstanding guy.
Yeah.
You wish every quarterback you ever had, whether he's elite or whether he's just a backup, had the great attitude that Tyrod does. He's a team-first guy. It's important to him. He works hard all the time. He prepares hard. And despite his limitations, he's a guy that guys gravitate towards. They like him. The team likes him. He's great in the locker room. He's inclusive to all the lesser players. I mean, they're part of the group. And when your best player, your most important player is that guy, that permeates the roster. And I think that was as important part of his game as any part of his physical game on the field.
803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Your thoughts, which direction, which priority should the Bills have as they approach the upcoming offseason personnel season? Let's go to Tom on Grand Island. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. My number one priority, I think their number one priority, I'm going to go out and say it. I think it's pretty obvious now that, Bean and McDermott are looking for an upgrade at quarterback, and I wouldn't be surprised if they traded up to get one, like really high in the top five. But at the same time, you got to think about what that would cost and, you know, the other holes you have on the roster.
Well, Tom, do you have a price in mind? I mean, say you want to get up to where, I don't even know who's number, like the Giants. If you want to move up to where the Giants are at number two or number three, would you give up both your ones and a second rounder?
I wouldn't have no problem with that. If they fall in love with a guy like a Josh Rosen and they want to give that up, I'd have no problem with it.
So you just you trade?
Well, you know, a part of that with me is, you know, I'm 24. I don't know what it's like for this team to have a good quarterback. I've been waiting for them to, you know, get a guy.
Right, yeah.
I'm also 50-50 on such a decision because, you know, you've got holes at defensive tackle, linebacker, safety depth, backup running back. You know, if E.J. Gaines leaves, you've got, you know, you've got a hole there. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind it, but at the same time, I'm not sure.
The problem is,
I know,
Tom, here's the problem. That you got this problem that you just outlined pretty well. I got to admit, you laid it out pretty good.
The bewilderment.
It's the bewilderment.
Yeah.
Here's the issue that none of us know. Murph and I don't know, but Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to have to find out. You got to make phone calls to the top drafting teams, Cleveland, the Giants. Who's number three? I don't even know who the number three is. Niners were there, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be that group. There they are. It's
Colts.
The Colts and the Cleveland Browns. Now, the Colts are a prime candidate to grab some picks. So are the Giants. Now, the Giants have got – they've said that they're going to stick with Eli, so I don't know that they want to draft another guy that high. But – the Browns have got one and four. They would probably be willing to trade away the number four pick as well. So there's the group right there. The Giants, the Colts, and the Browns are three teams that you might be able to pry out of the top four to get a pick. But you got to call them to find out which ones are available and what their price is. Are you willing to give as much for the Giants pick at number two as you are for the Browns pick at number four? Well, it shouldn't be that. No, I don't think you are. The two pick is almost assuredly they're going to get the guy that you want if it's, you know, and it's going to be different than the Browns. The Browns are taking a quarterback at one. Don't kid yourself. Don't believe anything else you hear. So there you go. There's your – what are you going to give to the Giants, the Colts, or the Browns to get that pick?
It takes an awful lot to move up that high.
What's it worth? What is it worth?
Yeah.
And that's a huge question.
I mean, and I don't know that there's a quarterback that would merit that kind of big move in this draft. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
I mean, I've done a cursory
but then again,
amateur.
Joe Montana might be in this draft. Tom Brady might be in this draft.
They might be, but nobody
would have
made
Jim Kelly might be in this draft.
Nobody would have made a move like them, like that kind of a big move for either one of those two, because you just don't
Peyton
know.
Peyton Manning could be in this draft.
Could be.
Probably not.
Yeah. Rich calling from Rochester. Hello, Rich. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Yeah. Good.
You know, my here and like Steve said earlier, you know, Peterman, you know, everyone ready to lynch him after his first showing, and you know that first game. I don't know how many of those balls I actually blame on him.
Yeah, out of the five, I got about at least two and a half.
I was seeing the same thing you were, and like I said, you know, I like the way at least he's taking shots. He gets rid of the ball quick. You know, it seems like he knows where he wants to go with it.
Yeah, no question, Rich. I mean, I get it. The results were pretty bad, but at least, you know, the kid dropped back and looked like an NFL quarterback. I got to tell you, the ball came out right. And even on the first interception he threw that I keep going back to time and time again, the one to DeMarco, that ball was right on the money, came out on time, you know, and it ended up bad. I mean, it got batted into the air and it was a pick. But even so, the rest of them, a couple of the other two, particularly the early ones, you know, the guy was making some throws and doing some things right. And, you know, you look at the games in which he appeared this last year, you know, it's really unfortunate. That L.A. game kind of stuck with everybody, the five-interception game in the first half where he just, you know, it just got out of hand for him real quick.
Yeah.
Then he came in and he got another chance to play in the Colt snow game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how are you going to throw the football in that? That's no valuation there. And he gets a concussion. Then he comes in and he gets like three plays at desperation time in the Jacksonville playoff game. You know, none of those, except for the LA game when it was his first time ever actually playing football in the NFL, you know, none of those was really a great look at him. The Colt game was an absolute joke. condition-wise. And in the playoff game, he got like three snaps, all desperation heaves down the field. So, you know, it's hard to evaluate him. And I know that I'm just not – I just want to see more of him because when he lines up and throws it out there, I like what I see.
Preseason was good.
The preseason was good and stuff. And, yeah, there's no doubt he totally, you know, puked all over his shoes in that L.A. game. But you know
had
what?
Bad luck as well.
I've seen guys, you know, have games like that, and it turned out to be really good players. So
you know what we don't know what Brian Daboll thinks of Nathan Peterman, whether that's the type of quarterback he thinks he can develop and win with. I don't know the answer to that question.
And was Nate Peterman playing the Colt game in the snow and the Jacksonville game? He was playing Tyrod Taylor's offense,
right?
And with no reps. And, you know, the L.A. game, he got 1 week of reps, and they kind of tailored the game plan to him. And, you know, they gave him some easy completions. And you know, he made a couple of good throws. But, you know, I just want to see more. And I don't – so, you know, and here's the thing. What happens if Peterman turns out to be a really great quarterback and we're having all this angst about everybody else in this draft, about Tyra, and Peterman turns out to be – you just don't know.
That would be a great outcome. It would be. It'd be the easy way
you
out.
You think?
Here's Dan in Lancaster. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air.
Murph, this is Dan, the ghost of Chuck Healy.
Hey, what's up, Dan?
How are you?
Good.
Listen, I got a question for you and Steve. Did you ever, when you guys were young guys starting out, and Steve Tasker, a young kid graduating, undersized football player, ever dream that you'd have one of 32 jobs in the National Football League as the announcer for Murph? I knew you probably dreamed of it. Steve Tasker, a little younger, undersized guy coming out of Northwestern, would ever be his name thrown around as a Hall of Famer and have such a successful career as a broadcaster and a football player?
Did you ever
allow yourself to dream?
No, it's a long, strange, like the Grateful Dead song, it's what a long, strange trip it's been.
Well, you know,
hopefully it's a little longer.
I've seen every game you played at the stadium, of them.
Thanks.
And I remember Murph when he first started out doing his radio show, similar to Van Miller, who used to do a radio show in the afternoon on WBEN with Dunkirk Dave, his fake friend. But I really admire both of you for your success.
Oh, Dan, that's sweet. Thank you.
And I know it probably was a dream in the beginning.
You should be in the Hall of Fame, Murph.
Yeah. You got to tell me how to respond when people say that. You've got that master.
That's good, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
that's
Dan.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I can't wait till they get to the Super Bowl and have him to give Murph the opportunity to describe that.
I told Murph last week when Jay Harris and I were doing all those interviews from the Super Bowl that, you know, I'm the same as you, Dan. It's going to be fun when the Bills get in one.
Yeah.
It really is. It's going to be fun when the Bills get in one to be a part of that and to have, you know, instead of doing a radio show every day, which you probably will do anyway.
you got my schedule mapped out for
Yeah,
the
you're
going
to be – you're going to be everybody's going to want you on their show. The play-by-play guy, the team, they want you on. Yeah. You know, you're going to be like Merrill Reese. This last year, this last couple of weeks with the Eagles. It's just, it's a fun, because then, you know, you're welcome at every venue. You know, you walk in and it's really cool. So I can't wait to have you go through.
I got to say, I'm really happy for Merrill Reese too. We've had him on the show a couple of times and I know him a little bit. And you know, he's been around so long. I guess you tend to think, well, he's been to this level before. No, that's his first Super Bowl win as the Eagles broadcaster. He's a great guy, a great iconic voice of the Philadelphia Eagles. You can tell I follow him on Twitter, just from his tweets over the last week or so, a week and a half, how much that meant to him to have the Eagles there and then to win. In fact, he had a tweet the other day, and I'll just paraphrase. He said something like, "It's been 7 days now since the Super Bowl win, and I still can't believe it, how great it's been." You know, I feel good for those guys. They put a lot into it and been around for
it's
a long
time.
Nice, he's been through some bad times there in Philadelphia, too.
It's been it's a great drink of water for a city, you know, like that loves that team as much as Buffalo loves their team. I mean, it's you know, we can feel it for them, you know, more so than any other team, maybe. Buffalo Bills fans, particularly of our vintage, people can feel good for another team another city that finally gets that drink of water after a long drought.
Let's squeeze in a call here. Trent calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Trent. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Number one, thanks for having me. But the quarterback situation, because there's going to be much debate and discussion regarding this. But in my opinion, Nick Foles, whether it's a second-round pick or whatever without giving up the farm, the Bills need to aggressively try to get him on the roster. Then Lamar Jackson, I may be wrong, but I believe he's going to fall to the Bills, and I believe they should get him at number 22, not 21, because if he falls to 21, they can draft him later. And then going into the season with those two guys and Peterman there, I'm all set at quarterback. I just believe we need to keep a lot of the draft picks and use them to upgrade the team on top of
Trent,
that.
I'm telling you, Nick Foles, Trent, I'm telling you, Nick Foles is not leaving Philly. There's no way you can get him out of there. I know you say get him, pay that price, whatever. You can't get Nick Foles out of Philly, because if Philly lets him go, they got no quarterback until late November of next year. They're not going to be able to repeat as Super Bowl champions, because they're going to have nobody playing quarterback for him. Carson Wentz cannot play next season until late in the season. So Nick Foles is not going anywhere. Nobody's going to get Nick Foles this year.
Good idea, though. Thanks, Trent. Hey, speaking of good ideas, our next guest has had plenty over the course of his NFL career as a punter and a host of the a podcast on Barstool Sports. He's the host of the Pat McAfee Show, longtime Indianapolis Colts punter, a couple of Pro Bowl appearances. We're happy to have Pat McAfee live on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Pat, it's John Murphy and one of the all-time great special teamers, Steve Tasker, here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us here today. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Obviously, I seen Steve Tasker on TV this past year. The guy looks good. He looks in shape. He looks like he could cover a kick right now if he need to. And, John, thanks for having me on. Let's chit-chat.
Pat, you're crazy, because even when I was at my best, I never looked like I could cover a kick.
Covered a few.
You're being nice, but I appreciate it. Tell us about what the scuttlebutt is from your end about my boy Frank Reich being the new head coach.
I'll tell you what, I think Indianapolis is so excited. Everybody would assume that Indianapolis is going to be upside down and think the Colts look bad and everything like that as a Colts fan after what happened with McDaniels, having a full press conference set up, having an entire schedule for his family whenever they get here, the ins, the outs, and then he backs out, kind of making us look bad. Then Chris Ballard and Jim Irsay go up and secure an incredible human. You played with him. I got coached by him. I was a third-string quarterback, obviously, my rookie year. Big deal. Frank Reich was the quarterback's coach. He was just such a gentleman, an upstanding human, a good guy. And I think what he's going to bring to the Colts facility is something that they've needed for a long time, which is an upbeat environment and a lot of knowledge. I think all the Colts fans have done now is they just found another reason to hate the New England Patriots with Josh McDaniels, and everybody in Indianapolis is excited for Frank Reich to lead the Colts and make them great again.
Hey, Pat, what's the Indianapolis take on what McDaniels did? And more importantly, what's the reason? Can anybody figure out what McDaniels' thinking was there? Was it really Bob Kraft trying to jam it at the Indianapolis Colts?
I mean, Schefter tweeted that, which is a hilarious tweet for Schefter to send out there. But I honestly believe that the head coaching searches and vacancies that happen during playoff situations are very difficult for communication. Now, granted, McDaniels' agent and Chris Ballard were the same agent, so I'm assuming McDaniels at some point told his agent, if we can get to these numbers, I'll do it. McDaniels, I assume, never got to talk to Belichick, never got to talk to Kraft during a Super Bowl run, because in the playoffs, especially in the evil empire of New England, it is all focused on winning games. So I'm assuming there was some miscommunication, either it's agent to Ballard or McDaniels to the agent, where they assumed that the deal was in place. And McDaniels didn't get a chance to talk to Belichick or Kraft until after the Super Bowl, figure out their life then. Hey, you could potentially be the head coach here whenever I'm done. Call it off with Indianapolis. Keep it moving. Everything in life revolves around communication issues, yeah. And I think that was one of those, just to a T, in a very large situation that had a lot of spotlight on it.
Well, I think one of the things, too, and you're right, there might have been some miscommunication, but I don't think there's any question that Josh McDaniels went against the grain, particularly when he started hiring assistant coaches for the Indianapolis Colts. And after this whole thing came down, his agent kicked him to the curb. So his agent was probably pretty upset, and maybe Ballard's agent, who that you say they share an agent, Ballard might have gone to the agent and said, hey, it's either him or me. You got to get rid of that guy.
I think there's no question
some hard feelings, right, Pat?
Pastor, you and I both know, like, agents don't fire anybody. agents work for people. So
that's
maybe
right.
They parted ways, but I hated whenever somebody came out and was like, the agent that with McDaniels fired McDaniels. That's not how it works.
Oh,
agents
yeah, that's
work
right.
for people. But I completely believe with the hiring of assistant coaches and everything like this, the amount of miscommunication must have been so high that something terrible happened. But in the end, I think if Frank Reich can get in here and win games, you know, he's a super comeback superstar. He's a guy that isn't normally the first guy in. He's the second guy chosen. And then he just works magic and magic. And I think if he comes up to win, this McDaniels thing will all just be a blip in the radar and just another reason for Colts fans and NFL fans in general to hate the New England Patriots.
Yeah, we were talking about that, in fact, Pat. We were saying how we hope that's the – we all love Frank Reich here. We hope that's the likely outcome that – 3 years, 5 years from now, there people in Indy are saying, man, good thing that McDaniels thing didn't work out. We got Frank Reich. How critical is it for Frank to come up with a good hire on the defensive side of the ball? And are there any names being mentioned out there for defensive coordinator?
I think we already have a D coordinator signed. I believe there's already – the guy from Dallas, I think, is already signed, locked, and loaded. So I assume that Frank is going to have to give him the okay. But if he was signed by Ballard, I'm thinking Ballard okayed him. So that could be a decision-making. But I think if Frank Reich can just bring – let's forget about the coaches. Obviously, you have to have good scheme and strategy. Doug Peterson's brain is a beautiful one. He's a great play caller. But if Frank Reich can get just a little bit of that magic from that Philadelphia Eagles locker room that they had this year and bring that into the facility at Indianapolis, I think he'll be successful at beginning. In the NFL, you got a lot of great players. The teams that like each other are normally the ones that strive and survive and succeed. And I think that's a big deal. And I think that lesson that Frank might have learned last year in Philadelphia could be much bigger tell than anything else. Obviously, you need a healthy Andrew Luck and a quarterback. But if he can figure out how to get the team to become a family, that's a big deal. And that's what Philadelphia had on their side that nobody else did this year.
I think it's a key move because there's no question the staff is going to be, you know, the nuts and bolts of what that team looks like on the football field. But and you're right, too. It's perfect analogy to say Frank Reich's the second guy in. He's the backup quarterback and as a player who engineered two of the greatest comebacks in football history, once in college and once in the pros, to come in as a, you know, as an off the bench in relief of the mess that became the head coaching search for the Colts. There's no question. I think that you know, the vibe has got to be around Indianapolis. The take we have on it, it's a better fit with Frank Reich than it was with Josh McDaniels. And we've been saying that all day today.
Absolutely. Frank Reich started his NFL coaching career here in
That's
Indianapolis
right.
with Peyton Manning. I mean, everybody's viewing him as he is a Colts guy. He wants to be here. There's no second guessing. There's nothing like that. You saw him in Jim Irsay's man cave watching the Olympics last night holding a newspaper. Shout out to the @Colts social media account for doing that. But I think Frank Reich was a guy who was beloved in our building, not only by players and other coaches, but the athletic trainers, the equipment managers, the business side of things. Whenever you have the entire building in harmony, it makes things so much easier to win. And I think Frank is just a guy who's loved by everybody. And whenever he comes into the room, I think he's going to be welcomed with big open arms. Now, granted, if he starts to suck, I think people will kind of change their feelings. But all signs point to Frank Reich being the perfect bounce-back coach for the Indianapolis Colts going forward.
Hey, Pat, what made the job attractive, I'm sure, to Frank Reich, most of it, and what made the job attractive to Josh McDaniels was probably the chance to have Andrew Luck. What kind of a chance are they going to get? Is Luck going to be ready to play next season?
Who knows, man? I mean, he went over to Europe over there, didn't get any special treatment, just a rehab. They say he's throwing a football. Early in the season this year, they talked about him potentially getting back by like week 7 or week 11 or something like that. And they showed him on the news, the local news, every time he was out there. And he looked tiny. I mean, he looked so small. It was like, there's no way this guy's about to get back on the field. He went over to Europe, did his thing, probably did a little sightseeing, a little coffee drinking, a little cafe drinking. Who knows what else you do in Europe? And he came back. He looked a lot bigger. He looked a lot stronger. They have him on a throwing program. And if Frank Reich, who has done some magic for a lot of quarterbacks in this league and in this game, if he can do some magic with Luck, give him some guidance on how to stay healthy. Now, granted, Carson Wentz, it didn't happen to him. They're pretty much the same player. I'll be excited to see what Luck can become with Frank Reich's leadership.
Now, what is the local feel, Pat, about the roster that Frank Reich's taken over? And there's no question that things have to be a little bit better, or it can't be all gun, you know, it's not all great in Indianapolis, because otherwise, you know, Pagano would still be the head coach. What's he inheriting?
Well, he's got a good young team right now. There's a lot of young players that are very good, that have the potential to be explosive. They have a young secondary that looks great. They spent some money on the D-line. T.Y. Hilton's still here. And I think with the third pick, everybody's saying we're going to pick up Saquon Barkley. I think the offensive line started to gel a lot better this past year than they had in the years past. I don't think the team is off to that bad of a start. They got a great punter. They got an incredible kicker if he's still around next year. I think the team is in a good place. I honestly believe that if you can get a team to like each other, any team can win. And I think Philadelphia showed that last year. And I think the Colts will have enough talent to maybe make a run if they can figure out how to bring it all together.
Hey, Pat, the last thing before we let you go, I know from we got a lot of fans of your podcast here, the Pat McAfee Show on Barstool Sports, and you had some great takes on Jason Kelce's performance at the Eagles Super Bowl celebration the other day. That was one of a kind, what he did that last Thursday, wasn't it?
Well, he was wearing a mummer suit, which, yeah, I just learned what it is. I guess that's a New Year's Eve party thing. I thought he looked like a big damn genie up there.
Right.
But he cut a promo. He cut a WWE promo about how the entire team has been left out and talked about and judged, and the entire city of Philadelphia chimed in with the Stone Cold Steve Austin, what, in between. It was just a magical moment. And that's something that the sport of football can do that not a lot of things can do. You can bring a city that is known for being the city of brotherly love, but I think everybody else would disagree with that statement, and be happy, a city of happiness with cops dancing, people eating horse poop, poles being Crisco'd. I mean, Jason Kelce went up there and just delivered an epic promo in a city that wanted to celebrate since 1960. I loved everything about it.
He set the bar high for the next Super Bowl celebration, championship celebration, didn't he?
Well, I don't think a lot of people should be trying to do that. See, the issue with the world we have now is everybody has the platform to give their opinion. Not everybody should be sharing their opinion. So I think unless you can get up there and talk, I don't think you should do it. But I think Jason Kelce was absolutely amazing. I'm happy for the Eagles fans. I'm happy for the city of Philadelphia. And I'm more happy that the Colts got their quarterback coach straight out of that locker room. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Hey, thanks for this, Pat. We appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your opinions with us. I hope we can talk again sometime. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you guys so much. Have a great one.
Thanks. Pat McAfee, former punter for the Indianapolis Colts, host of the Pat McAfee Show on Barstool Sports, a couple of Pro Bowl appearances, joined us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. They're better off, I'm telling you. He knows it. McAfee knows it. I hope the folks in Indy know it. They are better off with Frank Reich.
It's easy to say that, Jason, no question, after the fact, saying, hey, they're
better
off.
You think it is? He's the second choice. He's the bridesmaid.
Right, exactly. But by the same token, I believe it genuinely. He's a guy that's going to do well for them. And he looking through that, we were talking about his coordinators, the former Cowboys linebackers coach, Matt Eberflus.
Yes. That
who
got
will be
by
Indy's
me.
Defensive
he
coordinator.
Was
he was hired. He was signed under the Josh McDaniels deal.
Although it probably wasn't announced.
There was another. And him and another guy were also signed. And the Colts had said they're going to honor those deals. And so I would think, and there's no doubt, that when Frank Reich did the interview process with the Colts, the staff came up, these contracts came up, and Frank said, okay, I'll keep the guys on. But here's the thing. I want to hire either my own defensive coordinator. I've got a guy in mind for defensive coordinator. These were things that he addressed during the interview process that Frank would say, listen, yeah, I like the guy. That's one of the guys on my list. Let's go with him. But he's only going to get a one-year deal or a two-year deal or whatever. I want the freedom to pick my own guys when the time comes. But there's no doubt that's one of the things that a head coach during the interview process is asked about by the ownership and has to come up with a good list of a staff, guys he's going to get on his staff. That's part of the critical thing for a head coach to do.
You know, I hadn't thought about that. I knew that there were some assistants signed. I didn't know that was the coordinator.
And I didn't either.
To me, that's a bit of an impediment for Frank Reich. I would think he'd want a more veteran guy than a young up-and-comer to be his defensive coordinator. I wonder if Frank goes in there and say, and I'll have to negotiate it, but we'll keep you on staff, but I want you to coach, say, linebackers.
Right.
Like you did with Cleveland for several years, instead of coming on and being the coordinator. I need somebody better for a coordinator. What do you think?
That's right. I mean, that's exactly the conversation and how it went down. He said, the guy can stay, but I've got my own defensive coordinator that I want. Now, he can coach my linebackers, or he can coach my defensive line, or whatever I feel like giving him, but my coordinator is going to be whoever it is.
Yeah. I hope Frank gets that chance to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure, and I think he would probably did get his chance to do that, but there's a chance, too, between you and me, the NFL's not a big place. Frank might know the guy.
Yeah.
And you say, you know what? He was on my list for coordinators. I'm fine with that hire. I'm let's go with him. So it might be that situation as well. I don't know because of the fraternal order that it is. There's only, you know, you're talking about what 600 at the most
coaches
in the NFL on staffs, and a good percentage of them have all worked with at least one other coach on one other staff. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that Frank knows the guy anyway.
A lot of these questions likely to be answered tomorrow when Frank Reich holds his news conference in Indianapolis. All right, we're coming back with NFL True and False. Steve Tasker with us in place of Donald Jones today. I'm on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones. Donald's back tomorrow. Got a ways to go here, and we'd love to hear from you. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Your thoughts on the Bills, what their priority should be personnel-wise, moving through the next couple of months or so. We are heating in. We are moving into the really extreme action portion of personnel moves with free agency coming up, followed by the draft. I want you to rank the Bills' offseason needs from a personnel standpoint. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets. People like Pat McAfee. He's got a big following on Barstool Sports, apparently, Steve. People tweeting in, Pat McAfee on the John Murphy Show, how sick. Hey, Pat McAfee, great interview on the John Murphy Show. Yeah, people like that guy. He's outspoken, colorful.
Yeah.
Obviously a big fan of the hire, big fan of the Frank Reich hire, which that's good to hear. I would think, you know, they'd be tempted, I would think, in Indianapolis, although I can't speak for Colts fans, but I think there'd be a temptation to say it was their second choice. We didn't get the guy we wanted. We had to settle for Frank Reich. Big mistake if they view it like that. And I didn't get the sense at all from Pat McAfee that anyone's viewing it that way. That would be a big mistake. And
there's
timing involved here, too. Frank Reich, because of his involvement with the Eagles, didn't have a chance to be out there on the open market, right? It's probably, I think it was the only head coach interview he got.
That same argument can be made for Josh McDaniels. I think the reason the Colts liked Josh McDaniels was his first go around with Denver a few years ago in 2010, 11, or 13, or whatever that was. I can't remember exactly. Did not go well. And I think a guy who's got a chance to learn a lot in that situation, gone back to the coordinator's role, and had some success there. Obviously, you know, a couple of Super Bowl appearances and a win. I think they felt like that was a guy that had more water under the bridge than a guy like Frank Reich in the first interview process. So for that reason, I think, for lack of a better way to put it, I think Josh McDaniels was the safer choice than Frank Reich was. But I think. I agree with you. I think Frank Reich is a great choice. We love him here in Buffalo because we know the type of person he is. And that's Pat McAfee said that's, you can kind of think if you go with a guy like Josh McDaniels and he leaves you in the lurch like that, you want somebody with high character who's going to come in and not do that to you. And Frank certainly fits that bill.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that too. We you're friends with Frank. I've known him for decades now. And you try to divorce kind of the personal aspect from it, but from what I know of Frank Reich, and I mentioned this in the first hour of the show, he's got the right makeup, like almost the perfect makeup to be a leader of men. You called him presidential. He's got the right makeup temperamentally. We've had coaches come through here who I thought, it's just not the right temperament. It's just not the type of guy you need to be a head coach. Frank Reich is that type of guy, regardless of whatever deficiencies he may have, never coaching defense or whatever his staff looks like. I think he's got the perfect temperament to lead men, including men in the NFL.
I agree. I think he can certainly is comfortable in front of guys. And people think, he's got to be a football coach. Listen, an NFL pro football coach, every morning you get up in front of an NFL team full of a bunch of big dudes who are big time guy warrior type A.
Yeah,
they're fighters. They are guys who are in it. They're big physical specimens. They are celebrities. They are stars.
Millionaires.
They're rock stars, millionaires. And they did it with the sweat and, you know, sweat, blood, sweat, and tears of their own efforts. You know, I mean, these are guys. It's a hard room to impress. Frank can do that. He can stand up there and command a room like that. It's not easy. Even when you're the guy who's doing it, you know, and this, you've done it, you've seen it done. It's not easy once you turn around and every face is looking at you. Frank can do that. He also has the character to handle egos. He has the character to handle situations. The experiences he had as a player here in Buffalo, which is really only the tip of the iceberg, go all the way from the bickering Bills of the 1989 season all the way through to the, you know, to the Love Fest days that we had in the early to mid-90s.
Yeah.
He's seen that, and he's also seen it in Philadelphia. He's seen it in Indianapolis. He's seen it in San Diego. He has a wealth of experience and a character that lends itself to success.
Frank Reich, head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Any thoughts on that? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Time now to play our popular segment, NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Items in the news in the NFL, are they true? Are they false? Do we believe it? Johnny Manziel, ready to make an NFL comeback. He appeared on Good Morning America today, and Johnny Manziel had some comments about where he is at, where his head's at, and coming back to the National Football League.
I was self-medicating with alcohol. Like, it's what I thought was making me happy and helped me get out of that depression to a point of where I felt like I had some sense of happiness. But at the end of the day, when you wake up the next day after a night like that or after going on a trip like that, and you wake up the next day and that's all gone, and that liquid courage or that liquid, like, sense of euphoria that's over you is all gone, and you're left staring at the ceiling by yourself, and you're back in that depression and back in that hole, that dark hole of sitting in a room by yourself, being super depressed, thinking about all the mistakes you've made in your life, what did that get me? Where did that get me except out of the NFL?
Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, says he's been diagnosed as bipolar, taking medication for it. Talked just there about his alcoholism, said his goal is to get back onto the football field. True or false, Johnny Manziel is going to make it back to the NFL. Steve, your thoughts?
I think that's false. As important as the quarterback position is in the NFL and as desperate as a lot of teams are, I just don't think he's going to be able to do it. I don't think he's going to get a team to come in and give him the kind of opportunity it's going to take for him to be good enough to develop. I don't think he's going to get a chance to develop like he's going to need to do as a player. And because of that, I just don't think it's going to happen. It's one thing to rehab your life when that's what your focus is. It's hard to stay with that rehab when the pressure's on to do something else, to play football and to lead in a locker room like the guys we just spoke about, Frank Reich leading.
Yeah.
To be a quarterback in that environment with those guys in the locker room, that's a lot of pressure. And I think it's hard for a guy who's trying to keep his life in order off the field to do that with the pressure when the pressure's on him like it's going to be on the field.
I'm reluctant to say, but I agree with you. I don't think he'll make it all the way back. And I'm reluctant to say it because I want people to succeed. I want him to have success and to you know, conquer his personal demons. If he's bipolar, okay, and to get rid of his substance issues and to be successful. But, I mean, he's had a lot of chances, and I just don't see it happening. I hope I'm wrong, yeah. Quite frankly. I hope I'm wrong because it'd be one of the all-time ultimate comeback stories in the NFL. There seems to be, you know, appearing on Good Morning America, saying what he said about, you know, depression and, you know, one of the quotes, at the end of the day, I can't help that my wires are a little bit differently crossed than yours. Make no mistake about it. There's some image counseling, image coaching going on here too, which he's entitled to, and he needs a job in the NFL. That's what he does. But I don't even think his skill set translates that well to the NFL.
That's right. He's going to have to take time to develop, and who's going to give him that time under that kind of pressure and tolerate any kind of misstep that he might have, even if it's an innocent misstep, you know, the tolerance level's just not going to be there. So I just think it's going to be too hard a mountain to climb. Certainly, neither of us are cheering against the guy. I just don't think it's going to happen.
NFL True or False Part 2, the Patriots are a fear-based organization. That was the allegation from Philadelphia Eagles tackle Lane Johnson, who appearing on Nesson last week said, quote, I think the Patriot way is a fear-based organization. Do they win? Yes, they win. They won for a long time. Do I think people enjoy and say, I had a lot of fun playing there? No, I don't. That's the truth. He said when they go to interviews, they act like robots. He said, you only get to do this job one time. Let's have fun. He thinks the Patriots are a fear-based organization. Teddy Bruschi, Patriot apologist, shot back today and said, Lane Johnson, I don't know what he's talking about. I had a lot of fun. We had so much fun when I was there. I can't understand what he's saying. Patriots are a fear-based organization, true or false? I'm going to go true. I agree with Lane Johnson. I've heard my partner on the weekdays here, Donald Jones, talk about it. Fear works in the NFL, unfortunately, but that's the way it is. The fear of losing your job, the fear of getting in trouble, of losing your playing time. I mean, ask Mike Gillisley if the Patriots are a fear-based organization. He fumbled it up a couple times and sat the bench the rest of the way. Yes, I think that's true.
Yeah, they certainly have a low tolerance for lack of production on the football field. I don't know what, to me, I don't know what, how far that goes and how far you want to take that analogy, whether it's a fear-based organization. I know this, that when a player doesn't produce or when he's not the best option from the play, it doesn't matter who or what he is, he's on the bench. Is that fear? I don't know. I just think it's absolutely dispassionate, that's for sure. They make a call and they stick with it and they win games because of it. I don't think the best players that I was ever around would have ever had a problem with that at all. If you feel like you're good enough, you're going to play, that's not fear. That's something you wish would happen. A lot of great players wish they'd happen. I remember when I was covering the Jacksonville Jaguars when Tom Coughlin formulated that entire organization, hired everybody in the building as the head coach. That was a fear-based organization. Mutiny was always bubbling just under the surface. We'd go in there to cover the Jacksonville Jaguars with Tom Coughlin as their head coach, and the tension in the building was palpable. I don't get that sense from the Patriots.
Was this when the Jaguars were winning and going to conference
championship games? Yeah, and it's like after they'd been, Tom Coughlin had a pretty good run there. I mean, they won some playoff games, went to the championship game twice and all that, but, he didn't last.
Right.
The tension in that, year after year, week after week, the tension in that building was tangible.
Yeah.
It was tangible. I don't know if I could have existed in that environment. The Patriots do not remind me of that. Okay. So I'm going to have to say that's false.
Okay. NFL True or False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Steve and I back to wrap things up in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more. Steve Tasker has been gracious enough to join us all afternoon, and Donald Jones will be back. What are you laughing about?
You've
been pretty gracious. Thank you for doing that, by the way. Donald will be back with us tomorrow. Our Twitter poll today, let's try to wrap that up. It was it's a little difficult to decipher, but let's try, and let's talk about the issues raised on our Twitter poll. We approached the serious part of the personnel season. We wanted to know from you, how would you prioritize the Bills' personnel needs this offseason? And we're talking about the next couple of months here. On Twitter, most of you, about 42% of you, 43%, if you had to put them in order, you'd say quarterback number one, linebacker, center, edge rusher. 24% say quarterback number one, wide receiver, center, linebacker. 21% of you said wide receiver number one, quarterback, edge rusher, and offensive tackle. 12% of you had something else in mind. We had about 1,200 votes in on that. I'm telling you, I'd put defensive line, edge rusher, or I've been persuaded by some of our callers today that maybe interior defensive line is the way to go, at least to go first. Yeah, do they need a quarterback? Absolutely. They're going to have to do something at quarterback in the next couple of months here. But I'd be looking more to help out on the defense, Steve. That would be my ranking.
I agree, and it'd be the defensive front seven. I mean, the secondary was the strength of the team. So, yeah. I'm starting with the defensive line first and foremost on this team.
Yeah, and quarterback, they'll get there. The quarterback question
is going to be intriguing. Listen, the quarterback is the overriding topic of everything. And it's the overriding topic of every team in the NFL, even people who, like the Pittsburgh Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger, and I mean, all these teams with great quarterbacks, they still have it on their mind. It's always on the back burner for them. So, that'll never change until they get a guy.
The quarterback question, I don't think is going to be answered easily for the Bills in terms of it's hard to find the path there. It's, you know, we get calls and people say, draft one, move up, draft one. Other people say, get Kirk Cousins. Some people say, get Nick Foles. You kind of shut that down, as you were right to do. But I don't think it's going to be kind of a – the path to the quarterback answer for the Bills is unclear right now. Would you agree?
That's exactly the right way. You don't know what path they can take or what they're willing to take and what the path is going to cost to find a quarterback. Is it the draft? Is it free agency or what? Or is it – status quo. I mean, you just don't know.
And status quo, I don't think you can write that off. I know people.
I don't either.
I mean, I get it. And Donald has made a strong point over the weeks that the Bills clearly signaled their intention way back on November 19th when they went with Nathan Peterman at Los Angeles. And I see that point, but I just don't know if you can write that off. I don't know if you can shut that door and say unequivocally, Tyrod Taylor, no longer. I just don't know if you can say that.
Not until they do. I mean, this is a team, too. Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean always push every decision to the last hour. They're going to make sure they have every avenue covered until they make that decision for good.
Steve, thanks. Thanks for being
Enjoyed
part of the show.
Murph.
Thanks for all the great work at the Super Bowl, too. We didn't have a chance to thank
you.
For that.
It was fun. It was good.
Great. Great to have you here. Donald is back with us tomorrow on the show. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, our producer Jay Harris. Donald's back tomorrow with us, 12 noon to 3 p.m., right here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.